Okay, we're rolling. Kevin, what's up?
What's up, Joe?
Is that your phone?
Yep, I'm
Travis
sure.
Luter.
Sorry.
So, first of all, welcome. Thanks for doing this. Appreciate it.
No, thank you.
And it's good to see you again, man. I haven't seen you in forever.
Yeah, man. It's been a few years.
Try to keep this like a fist from your face.
Fist from my face.
Yeah. Wow. We were talking right before about injuries. You know, it's like I always like to talk to guys who've been doing jiu-jitsu a long time because they always have this laundry list of injuries. And you know, you were talking about neck fusions and disc issues and, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just like everybody else. We get, you know, everybody gets injured. We all get old. It just takes time. But, you know, my opinion is if I'm going to teach jiu-jitsu, I have to stay doing the art. Yeah. I think that when people just teach and they don't train, they you know, it's like it's a perishable.
Yes.
You know, it's like your skills are perishable. And then it's also your thoughts. It's like, yeah, you know, it's like, oh, if we just, that's when you start seeing bullshit jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
And so it's like, if I'm going to teach, I have to train. And it's like, you know, I love training. I'd much prefer to, you know, I wish I could still fight, but I can't. So it's like, but I do train. And it's like, and, you know, I have to.
Did you notice a difference in improvement of your skills when you start teaching?
Yeah, for sure. I think that teaching definitely, you know, helps you improve because the way that I think about it is that, you know, when you're teaching, you have to think about how he's looking at a problem. So you show him a move and then you come back and he comes back with a question and it might be in a way that you've never thought about it before. And then, so then you've got to break down how to answer that question for them so that it makes sense to on their level at their wavelength, you know, so it's like that helps me. Because now I understand the position even essentially better. Yeah, I could do this position before, but now it's like I've answered so many different questions over the years, you know, that it really, really improves your jiu-jitsu.
Kevin, when you started training, did you start right away with Travis or did you start somewhere else?
Like jiu-jitsu?
Yeah.
Yeah, I never did jiu-jitsu with anybody else but Travis.
Did you do martial arts before?
Yeah, I was a kung fu black belt when I got there.
Oh, that's right, because you call yourself a kung fu fighter when you enter into the octagon.
Yeah, everybody's kung fu fighting.
What kind of kung fu was it?
So it was actually a mix. It was a mix between Hawaiian Kempo. No, my bad. American Kempo and Kung Fu Sansu. So Kung Fu Sansu was originated in the States from Jimmy H. Wu bringing it over. And then Kempo just has 1,000 different stories, so couldn't really keep up with that. So I was always more fascinated with the Kung Fu Sansu aspect of it. So I actually went to Bill Lasseter's studio out in Rancho Cucamonga, California, and took a couple classes there. So I was just mainly focused on the Kung Fu aspect of it. Sansu was always funner than the forms that we did for Kempo.
I'm trying to remember what Sansu is. What's the fundamental difference between Sansu and other kinds of Kung Fu?
Probably the other differences I probably couldn't tell you, but it's more, I guess you could say it's more common, you know, and so it's more like, it's more brutal, you know, we're not doing a bunch of pretty things.
Tai Chi type
things. Yeah, nothing wrong with Tai Chi, but we're not doing a bunch of breathing techniques and stuff like that. It's more so like, bash you over the head with this stick, bash you over the head with my fist, you know, just, it's a mean Kung Fu style, you know, and it worked well for me, especially in high school, it was my type of thing, you know.
Yeah, you don't see a lot of... There's a lot of kung fu techniques that I think probably would work in the octagon. Like, here's one that you see now that you didn't used to see before, people thought was kind of bullshit, is that oblique kick.
Yeah.
Like, the oblique kick is super legit, especially to the legs. But do you ever see Lorenz Larkin use it?
He did it to me.
Dude!
Yeah, he sends it to the leg, and then he'll send it to, like, the chest
area. To the body,
yeah. And it's like it... It throws you back. It's really vicious.
He did it to Neil Magny, and I was like, God damn, that's like a fucking sidekick. Like, the way he throws it.
And he throws it pretty quick, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's kind of hard to see it coming, too, because it's not really telegraphed. You don't know if he's doing push kick. He's coming with the...
Right.
You don't know if he's going to question mark. It's a sexy kick.
It's legit.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it wasn't around for a long time.
No.
I think... I want to say that the Winklejohn's influence...
Yeah.
With like John Jones, like those guys were like one of the first guys to start throwing that kick hard to the legs.
Yeah, John was stepping on the legs and keeping good distance with it, you know. I never really seen John throw it to the body, you know.
No.
It was just Lorenzo's really the only person I've ever really seen throw it to the body like that. And I guess you could say it's kind of an oblique kick in Muay Thai sometimes when they kind of try and fake the roundhouse and come with the push kick instead. But, you know, oblique kick straight up to the body, I mean, Lorenz Larkison, but got it started, for sure, for sure.
I never even practiced it until I saw him do it to the body, and then I went and did it on the bag, because I was like, oh, shit, you can get a lot of pop out of that. You know, I never thought anybody would be throwing it to, there it is. That's how he does it.
Yeah. He's done that same thing to me. It sucks.
Yeah, he's a super underrated guy.
Yeah.
He's tough. Yeah, it's interesting now. He's over at Bellator, and there's a lot of, like, real talent at Bellator now. It's getting close. Like, I always wondered, like, when's it going to be where Bellator is essentially equal to the UFC? Like, how long is it going to take?
Never.
It's not.
I agree. I don't think it'll happen.
You say that. No. What if Bellator just backs out, beep, 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 that big Brinks truck. And like, Kevin, look what we got here.
Never.
Stacks and stacks of gold.
Nah.
No? Never?
Nah.
No?
Nah. I mean, back in the day, I used to want to go to Bellator because they didn't have USADA. And so I was like, I can smoke weed there.
But now you can smoke weed in the UFC.
Yeah, so UFC is way better. Yeah.
Well, I think it's undeniable that the talent level in the UFC is higher. But I think it's also undeniable that there's guys like Douglas Lima, like Patricio Pitbull. There's super high level guys. Musasi.
Yeah.
There's Vadim. There's like real legit world class fighters over there right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I agree. I mean, you know. Yeah. You know, the person that gives them the biggest argument, I guess, is say Michael Chandler coming over doing what he did. You know, and it's
that's a great example, right?
Yeah. You know, very, very good example. You know, but you're not, you know, it's like there's great basketball players out there that never make it to the NBA. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's people on the streets that can do fantastic things that never make it to the greatest spot ever. The UFC is the greatest spot ever for a reason. You know, it's like you're probably going to perform differently than you would in Bellator than you would in the UFC. My Bellator debut versus my UFC debut, you know, I finished that guy, first round, you know, triangle choke, rolling around like it wasn't nothing, doing things that I could have did. You know, to any local level guy, but I couldn't do that in the UFC. I guess you could say, like you said, higher level competition all the way around. So I just don't feel like Bellator adds up.
Well, I don't think it's as deep. No, right?
Not as deep.
You got like a couple super legit guys.
Yeah.
Whereas like look at the UFC's 155 pound division. Like Jesus Christ, it's a shark tank.
It is
filled with savages.
It is.
Pride had the best chance. You know, it's like there was a time where Pride was, you know, the talent level I think in Pride was actually better than what was in the UFC at the same time, that, you know, mid 2000s, you know, right before they collapsed. But the UFC being first gives them definitely a heads up. You know, it's like it's kind of like the difference in between Coca-Cola and Pepsi. You know, it's like Pepsi's always, you know, trying to play catch up. You know, it's like, and I feel like that's kind of what everybody's doing with the UFC. UFC has, you know, probably a better game plan, business plan than some of these other organizations, and then they got a huge bankroll too. You know,
it also has the name, right?
Right, it's the UFC.
It's like if someone comes along with the XFL, like okay, but you want to play in the NFL,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
You want to be the UFC champion.
Plus, like, I wonder what, like, the highest, like, the best person in Bellator, like, as far as fan-wise and everything like that, how many followers do they have, you know, versus the hottest guy in the UFC?
Well, let's think about it. Who do you think is, like, the most popular guy in Bellator? We could find that out right now.
Well, I would guess it's the...
Venom what's his Page? Name?
No, I think
Venom
it's
Page is pretty... But Lima knocked him out.
What's his name? Who's the heavyweight? And the
Ryan Bader,
Ryan Bader's probably up there, isn't he?
Ex UFC guy, there. He's out of there. He doesn't even count.
He just got KO'd.
Yeah, he got his belt.
I knew that. But that was at light heavyweight. He's still the heavyweight champion.
Yeah, he's still the heavyweight champion.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, if the light heavyweight knocked him out, he probably can knock him out at heavyweight too.
That dude's a beast. That Russian dude.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
he's a fucking beast.
Yeah.
And Bader's, you know, how many fights has he had? He's been around for a long time.
Bader's been around a long time.
Long time.
Yeah, long time.
Time's a bitch. It gets everybody.
Yes. Yeah. There's no way around it. You know, one thing I was going to say, Jean-Jacques Machado doesn't have any injuries.
No, John looks good.
It's crazy. You know, I asked him. He had like a little problem with his knee. Got a little meniscus tear. But he got some cortisone shot in it, and it's fine. No back problems, no nothing.
The difference with him is that you know, it's like there's somebody that trained all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, and is always in really, really good shape. You know, it's like back when he was winning Abu Dhabi and stuff like that, I remember talking to him. You know, it's like he's going in there and he's killing, you know, just trying to kill his cardio, You know, it's like he submitted his way through ADCC and was it 1999? And then in 2000, and then 2000, he lost in the finals to Henzo on decision. I think And then he lost to
Matt Serra.
But that was a weird one. That was a weird one. Yeah, so like, you know, so that was the first match of the tournament, and Matt went out there and pulled guard on him, right? Like jump guard. And then they fought like 90%. You know, so in the first 5 minutes back then, and I don't know what the rules are in ADCC now, is you could pull guard. And right, it wasn't penalized. Yeah, you didn't lose any points that year. And then after the 5 minutes, if you pulled guard, so they ended up on their feet with like 20 seconds left, and Jean-Jacques pulled guard. And that's how Matt won. Mm. It's like it was a 0-0 match until Jean-Jacques pulled guard with that, you know, 20 seconds left, and he didn't have time to do anything after that.
Yeah, there's a lot of wacky rules.
They're crazy.
Yeah, I don't love the ADCC rules. You know, it's like
no, I don't either.
It makes it really, really boring to watch.
But I think what's really interesting with what's going on with like a lot of these guys that are trying, like the Gordon Ryan situation, where he's trying to have these no time limit matches with people, it's like boring. Submission only,
right?
It's boring until he catches them. Yeah. Because his idea is like, listen, all I'm trying to do is submit you.
Yeah.
You're just trying to beat me on points. So let's just have a no time limit thing and just see who can submit who. And I'm betting I can submit you. It's just going to take more time.
I would do that.
Kevin'd be a beast at it.
I'd do that. Kevin's a pain in the ass. That'd be good style.
I mean, it seems like that's what jiu-jitsu really is, right? Jiu-jitsu's not who can submit each other over 5 minutes, or who could get on top, or who can get side control. Those are great ways of finding who's got positional advantages and who, you know, who won these scrambles and exchanges. That's great. But ultimately, jiu-jitsu is about submission.
The problem with it is in a tournament format and stuff like that.
Yeah, you can't do it.
Yeah, it just takes too much time. It's like, you know, the Gracies did the Machados versus Gracies back in the 99, 2000, something like that. So it's like all the Machados, you know, it's like I flew from Texas to California, and we competed at the Gracie Academy. And, you know, and that was fun. But the problem was you had some matches that were over an hour long. Oh, and it's like, and then the Ultimate Submission Showdown. It's like the Ultimate Submission Showdown that Horian put on, you know, and had his two sons on opposite sides of the bracket so they could meet in the finals and stuff like that. And, you know, like his Haran Gracie went against Jeff Munson. And it was like an hour and 15-minute match. You know, it's like – and then Haran ended up winning on points. And then he fought me in the next round. You know, it's like, and that's, you know, it's like, and then David Avalon beat the other son on the other side. And, you know, so it was just, you know, it's the problem with those tournaments is that it's like, you know, this, he had it set up so that the first person, I think, to 12 points won. And it's like, so it's like the match would end with, so it's like, and it was weird because it was like a takedown was worth one, passing the guard was worth one, a mount was worth four, and taking the back was worth four. And that was the only points. There was no reversal points. There was no anything like that. But if you held guard for 3 minutes, I think, for 3 minutes, then they would give you a point and then reverse the position. And so Jeff Munson versus Haran Gracie, since there was a weight difference, they gave Haran 2 points to start with, and then they just held guard for 3 minutes. That's all they do. And it's like, and then they'd switch. And then Jeff would get in, you know, starting his guard, and he'd sit up, single leg him, and he'd get his point. And then this went over and over and over and over. And so it's like he ended up winning by 2 points. It was 10 to 12, first person to 12, and he won. So it's like, you know, but it made it not as fun to watch. You know, it's like,
I think you'd have to do, I think what's going on right now with these streaming matches on the internet is kind of the way to go to, with guys like the Donaher Death Squad type dudes. Like, just do no time limit. Because if it's streaming, same thing as like, you know, anything you want to do on YouTube or a podcast or whatever, you don't have a specific time that you have to do it in.
Yeah, that's true. You could definitely do that. You know, it's like, I personally, you know, I like IBJJF rules. They're not perfect, you know, but I prefer those over a lot of the different rule systems that are out there. I liked what Horian set up, you know, for the Ultimate Submission Showdown. I thought that was a good set of rules for me. I liked it.
How do you feel about the EBI rules?
I don't love the EBI rules. It's like, I think Eddie got high as hell.
Whoa.
He got high as hell.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
and decided, hey, I got a great idea. What we'll do is if this happens, then we're going to do this. And it's like, they're okay. It's
it worked out for me.
That's because for his style, it's perfect. It's like him and IBI, it's really, really hard to beat Kevin because it's like you're not going to score on him. He's going to – it's going to go over time. And then, you know, Kevin –
and you can stand out of bounds. I love that.
Yeah, it's like, you know, Kevin likes it a lot. So for me, not so much.
It's just interesting to see like situations where maybe the person in a regular match never would get to your back, but now they're starting on your back with the hands locked and the seatbelt.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know? I mean, it's, you know, for Kevin, that's great. You know, it's like for older folk, probably not as good. For me, I don't know. You stay away from my back. I don't want you back there.
So, Kevin, how long have you been training with Travis?
11 years.
Yeah. 11 years.
Yeah. Wow. It's been a while. It's been a long time.
And when did you decide you wanted to fight MMA?
I wanted to do kickboxing when I got there. I was really a big fan of Kevin Ross. And then I got there and Travis was like, as difficult as striking is, jiu-jitsu is more complex. And then he went like this. And I was like, all right, bet. I was like, I'm going to give it a shot. And then I cried the first day after practice.
Did you?
Yeah, I swear I did. I went home and I cried. I didn't even make it home. I got in the car and I cried. My mom was like, what's wrong? And I was like, I'm a black belt and these white belts are fucking me up. And so then the next day I was like, all right, cool. I started fucking some white belts up. Then there were some blue belts tapping me out. So then I cried again. And then so.
How old were you at the time?
I was 18 years old, crying like a little girl.
17.
I was 17. I'm just 17. 18. And then I was like, and then all of a sudden, you know, it's just. I started tapping people out, and I was like, oh, this is shit. I was like, I can do this, you know?
When Kevin came to the gym, you know, it's like jiu-jitsu is a great equalizer. It's like nobody is good when they first join. Kevin was the exception. You know, it's like Kevin comes in. He's a huge pain in the ass the first day. It's like he could throw his body, and he'd do stuff, and you'd do stuff to him once, and then you couldn't do it to him again. And this is, you know, it's like where everybody's coming up to me going, hey, where'd he train before? And I'm like, you know, he says he didn't, you know, and it's like, well, I don't believe him. You know, it's like everybody's like, nobody believed him. And it's like, and then it's like over time we figured out he was telling the truth. It's like, yeah, he'd done a little bit in the Kung Fu, but nothing to really, he's just really, really talented. And it's just, you know, it's like, there's not a lot of guys that you roll with where it's like, you know, that can do what Kevin can do. You know, this is a different human. You know, it's like I've trained with Randy, I've trained with GSP, I've trained with, you know, a whole bunch of different guys that are really, really good. Kevin's different. You know, it's like this is a different animal. It's
wow.
It's like when I say that, you know, Kevin's, you know, it's like Kevin's so much different. It's not fair. It's like, you know, he's, you know, it's like this is the most talented guy that I've ever trained with by far.
Wow.
You know.
But how's that feel?
Or went against.
How's that feel? It's got to feel pretty good.
I'm like his
good.
Son, so he just makes me feel good.
No, that's not true. It's like I'm not making him feel good. This is something that I firmly have believed. And it's like, and the whole thing is Kevin's starting to believe it now. You know, it's like, it's you know, it's like he's starting to say, okay, maybe I'm a little bit different, you know, because it's like, you know, what he can do is just totally different. You know, it's like when we were at the Ultimate Fighter House, and it's like we went outside and we were doing sprints, you know, the whole team was doing sprints. GSP is doing with them. You know, he's mid-back. You know, it's like Pete Spratt is freaking, you know, it's like he'd give us a 10-yard head start and beat us by 10 yards in a 60-yard race. It was just crazy. It's like on how fast he was. GSP's mid-back. You know, it's like he was fast, but nothing crazy. This is somebody who, you know, in my opinion, you know, it's like you have to get into like the music school, Girard Music School in New York.
What's it called?
Juilliard, you know, they have a minimum level of requirements to get into it and minimum level of talent. Do you have this much talent to get into here? And then after that, then it's about who wants to train the hardest to become becomes first seat. So it's like, you know, so it's like, you know, if you make the requirements, I would have never made the requirements to get into some place like that. But it's like you can become the best. You know, just with practice time, because it's like it's a direct relation to who's the best is based on how much time you're willing to put in there. It's like so, like a GSP. I've never saw anybody train like him. It was crazy the way that he would train. It's
in what
like,
way?
What's that?
In what way?
You know, we'd show up. You know, it's like so the my team. We had the first workout. The other team had the second workout. But we'd get there and. Almost five, at least 5 days a week, GSP's already there. He's just finishing his workout. And then he's going to train with us. And then he's going to train with the next team. And then he had another workout scheduled for immediately after that. You know, so it's like, you know, it's like this is inhuman that he, you know, it's like whatever we were going to do, GSP was going to do. Because we didn't really have coaches and stuff like that. But he, you know, so he's doing, you know, so much workload. You know, it's like just crazy, crazy, crazy. So it's like, you know, he's arguably one of the most, you know, one of the best all time with GSP. And the talent level, though, nothing compared to Kevin. It's different. You know, it's like I rolled with him. I rolled with Randy. I rolled with, you know, all these guys. You know, I've done striking with them.
I don't like to work out, though.
And, you know, and that's the crazy thing. Is
Kevin. Well, how often do you work out, though?
I work out a lot more now than I used to. But, you know, it's like when I first joined the gym, I didn't. You know, it's like I'd go roll because rolling was fun. And if you said we had some sparring, I'd go spar because sparring was fun. If we said we had wrestling, I wouldn't show up because wrestling sucks. You know, it's like if the workout's hard, I don't want to do it. You know, if it's something that I can control, I'm completely down for it. You know, it's like strength and conditioning. It's like I love Suge because some days I can get away with some things. You know, I offer him some free food and he's like, all right, come on, we'll take off 5 minutes. Let's go. You know what I mean? But it's like I hate hard workouts. You know, it's like all those hard workouts and people are like, yeah, I live for that. I'm like, tripping, bro. What are you smoking? I'm smoking weed. I want
to
chill.
That's, you know, funny because like, you seem to be having fun inside the octagon. It's one of the interesting things about watching you fight. You're having fun in there. It's very obvious. So like you're having fun in training as well.
Yeah.
And you're getting better while you're having fun. And of course, you're gonna get a lot of cardio out of just training and training hard and doing all this fun stuff.
Yeah.
But you don't like to do the supplemental stuff.
No, I don't like to do supplemental stuff. So swimming works out because we have a heated pool and I love to swim. Oh, so I'll go in the heated pool and
cardio.
I'll stay there all day. You know, I don't have a problem with that. But if the pool's not warm, I'm not going in there. You know, and if the workout's hard, I might do it on Monday, but then Tuesday, Wednesday come around, I'm going to have an excuse to why I can't make it to the gym.
Do you wonder if you're going to reach your full potential with this mindset?
No, I don't really care.
You don't care?
No.
That's not true.
Travis wants me to reach my full potential. Sometimes I do care, but most of the times I don't. You know, it's like
he does care. You know, it's like the whole thing is Kevin's going to say that he's not going to care, and it's like, you know, and maybe it's because, you know, subconsciously it's, you know, he's setting himself so that it's like, you know, I don't want to say that I want to do this. I don't. If I say that I care, then I have to own it and I have to go after it and stuff like that. But no, he cares. Work. You know, it's like that's not true. It's like he's out there working his ass off. It's like he's training. He trained crazy hard yesterday.
I'm glad you're here right now.
Yeah,
you're balancing this out because I know he's kind of finagling us here.
Yeah, no, Kevin works his ass
a little
off,
bit. It's
like, no,
come on, man. I've seen your fights. There's no way you could be that good and work out
like,
hard.
And he, you know, it's like Kevin's in there. You know, it's like, does he want to do it? No, it's like, but it's like I said, how many rounds? And he goes, no, let's do four. So he wanted to do more. You know, it's like, and then, okay, we're going to do five. And it's like, he doesn't like it. He might not like it, but he'll do it. You know, it's like, and it's like he's over there working with Suge. You know, it's like, and the whole thing is.
Suge is your strength and conditioning guy?
Yeah. And hands.
And hands as well?
And hands. Yeah, he does a good job.
And rolls good blunts. Makes good spreads. He's a great guy.
We've got to cut down on the blunts, but other than that, we're good. And the spread's awesome. but no, he's willing to work. You know, it's like he's. You know, he's bullshitting you a little bit. It's like Kevin's in there doing the hard work, and it's like he's starting to believe more. You know, it's like he's for sure. You know, okay, yeah, let's do this, let's go to work.
Wrestling's starting to be fun. You know, it's like,
is you getting better at it?
I'm getting better at it for sure.
Kevin
for
has
sure,
never
sure.
shown what he can do when he's in the octagon. It's like, you know, Kevin is. Yeah, I'll pretend like Kevin's not here right now. It's like Kevin subconsciously is worried about getting tired. And so he'll let people take him down because it's like, you know, he had success in the minor leagues and stuff like that. You know, he'd submit people off of his back, and it's like he won't always fight the takedown. And then, you know, after Thiago, he's like, okay, that sucks. I don't want to be on the bottom again. And it's like, and so then he's, you know, he'll wrestle more, but it's starting to kick in that it's like, okay, I have to be on top. But it's like in the room, you can't take him down. You know, it's like we got really, really good wrestlers that are, you know, that, yeah, we get him down, but we have to do it. You know, it's like, okay, this guy's going for until he gets tired. And then we jerk him out, and we got another wrestler that's coming in on him as soon as they're, you know, so we might use three guys in a 5-minute round just trying to tire him out,
Coach,
forcing him.
Don't tell people this. Then Brunson's not going to take the fight.
Oh, I know. Brunson's going to be scared.
Brunson's going to take the fight.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. He's going to take that fight.
Yeah.
He's a veteran.
Yeah. A veteran? No. We have like the same record almost.
Yeah, you're a veteran too.
Yeah, you're a veteran.
No, okay. I'm 28. I'm young.
But I'm not saying you're a veteran as in it's a positive thing. You have a lot of good experience.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, and Derek has a ton of world-class experience.
Yeah, he's been in there with some, you know, he's been knocked out by all the good guys, you know. So it's amazing to find out if I'm a good guy or not. You know, you knock him out and you're a good guy. Yeah, you know, it's pretty cool.
Coming off the Jacques Ray fight, that was one of the craziest KOs I think I've ever seen. I watched the fight again a couple days ago because I knew that I was going to see you again. I wanted to watch it one more time. You heard him before the big punch.
Yeah.
You heard him with another punch before that. And they showed it in the replay. They showed the big punch that really sent him back, staggering off the back. But you had rocked him with a punch off your back just before that.
Hammer fist.
Was it hammer fist?
Yeah, those hammer fists off the back. I don't know why. It's like those hammer fists, when you're on your back, they hurt. You know, like you generate good power.
But there, well, look at that. Yeah, that for sure. But even before that, if you go back before this, the hammer fist for sure stunned him. But even before the hammer fist, you hit him with one punch from, right there. See, exactly. Like now you see him how he's covering, and then you hit him with a hammer fist. The hammer fist definitely hurt him. Oh, you see, he's real wobbly. But I think it was really that first punch that sent him.
When I did my research on this, when I was just thinking about it, and I was thinking about it over and over again, like, what the hell could possibly make this happen, right? And it's like two things. One, if you look at my right leg right there, he holds that leg for dear life, right? He holds that leg, like that leg makes a difference in the fight, right? And I guess it does. Then he looks at it. Look how he looks at that leg as it whips around. Bow! And he gets smacked, right? So he's looking at the leg almost like the leg is going to kick him. And so if you're thinking about the leg, you're not looking at the punch. So the punch is going to hurt a little bit more.
Yeah.
And then everybody thinks I was on my back, but I was actually on one hand when I did it. You know? So it's kind of like capoeira. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You play the video game and the guy Eddie, he's doing all that dancing and stuff like that. And he's on one hand doing everything. It's just kind of like capoeira if you think about it.
Did you ever see Randy versus Ensign? Ensign Inoue? Uh-huh.
Yeah.
When they fought in Japan, Ensign was throwing these nasty leg kicks off of his back.
Yeah.
Off of his back, he was kind of like sideways on his back, and he was just cracking him with these nasty leg kicks. I was like, whoa, this is generating a lot of power from that position.
I want to see this.
Yeah, like, and not like a straight leg kick, you know, like attacking the knees, just chopping at the legs.
Like a roundhouse?
Off of his back. And then he caught Randy in an armbar.
Yeah, Ensign was an interesting guy. It's like I read that, you know, he was playing racquetball, and a guy approached him about training.
Is that Egan or Ensign?
Maybe it was Egan. It was Egan.
See, you know, it's like, so Randy's coming at him, and he's, look at this. He's hitting him with these nasty kicks off of his back. You see how he's doing that? Like, he scoots forward, and he was generating a lot of power off of his back. And Randy just wanted to stay above him. Look, see, he's attacking with these leg kicks.
Fighting the calf right there on that.
Yeah, they had good power to him. I remember this was a big win for him because, you know.
Probably his biggest win ever.
Yeah, I would say so, right?
I think if they would have fought, you know, 100 times, Randy wins 99 of those.
Well, how can you say that when Ensign won the one time they fought?
That's what I think.
Because you're a Randy fan. But when he fought Royce Alger, that was a giant win too because Royce Alger was coming over. He was an elite wrestler, and everybody was like, this is what's going to win in the UFC. These big, powerful wrestlers are going to take you down and ground and pound you. And Ensign caught him in an armbar and broke his arm.
Yeah.
He had good jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
You know, he got IBJJF and him are in a little bit of a squabble.
Yeah. What is going on with that? Like,
you know, well, he was an inactive. He was inactive. He had never done his paperwork. You know, it's like, is that bullshit? Yeah, it's a little bit bullshit. But he was also inactive in from what I hear, he wasn't really training. You know, it's like the way that rankings work is that it's like, in order for me to be ranked up after black belt, I have to be training. Yeah, it's like, or you know, it stagnates. And I don't think that that's the actual real issue with the IBJJF is that he just didn't do his you know, his paperwork a long time ago. You know, John Jacques had that problem. You know, it's like when they first, you know, years ago, it's like he couldn't, you know, if I remember right, they gave him like two stripes on his black belt. And this is just a couple of years ago. And then Hickson heard about it and ranked him up to, I think, Coral Belt.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, it was, you know, kind of a big deal.
It's,
you know,
Coral. Coral's that black and red?
That black and red belt. Yeah. So Hickson did that. And it's like, you know, it's kind of a fuck you to, I could say fuck you, right?
Yes.
Cool. It's, that, you know, to the IBJJF, I think, you know, it's like a little family squabble. So.
Yeah, the whole ranking thing is weird, right? Because some guys can just decide that they're forming their own system, and then, you know, like
at the end of the day, it's like, you know, it's like, you know, this goes back to samurai times, and there was no belts, you know, right. It's like, and then they started putting in, I think the original belts were white and white, black, blue, and that, like, even in Brazilian jiu-jitsu, it's like when it was given to the, you know, to the Gracies back in the day, I think that was the rank. Hoyce had explained it to me, because it's like, so the white belt was the beginner, a black belt was you'd achieve the rank of black belt, you were the expert, and then the blue belt was the teacher. And so Elio, right before he died, you know, the last few years would train in a really, really dark blue belt. And it's like, you know, and it's like, so he'd go put the black belt on or the red belt on for the pitchers and stuff like that. But when he was teaching, he would wear a blue belt. And now Hoyce, when he does his seminars, if you look really, really closely at his belt, it's blue.
Really?
Yeah, it's not black. He's doing that, you know, to honor his dad and stuff like that. So
that's really interesting. People love belts, though. They love, you know, like finding out that you've got that you've passed. You know, you reach the next level. It gives you a nice boost. You feel good.
Yeah, but it's a perishable skill. You know, it's like everything's perishable. It's like, you know, it's like if you don't go shoot, you know, it's like that skill's going to go away. If I don't train jiu-jitsu, that skill's going to go away. And it's like, and it's striking, whatever it is, you don't drive your car, you're not going to do as well with it. You know, it's like if you're a race car driver, you got to practice. You know? It's like, and so, yeah, and in that ways, you know, it's like, do I start over? You know, I haven't trained for 5 years, 10 years.
Right.
You know, should I start over? Do I still wear my belt? I achieved it at one time. It's complicated. You know?
Yeah, it is complicated, right?
Yeah.
But getting a black belt from Travis Luter, that's a big fucking deal.
Yeah, it takes a long time.
That's a big fucking deal. That's legit.
It takes half a lifetime. Oh. You know, you can do it. It just takes half a lifetime.
What is your? Do you have a favorite thing that you like to train in?
Yeah, the gi.
You like the gi?
Yeah, as long as we're in the gi, I'm happy. I love the gi, especially a new gi. You know, I love the gi. And it sucks because I just bought like 5 new gis, and I haven't been able to train in the gi since buying 5 new gis.
Because you're training for MMA.
It's just I've been at all my classes seem like they've been no gi or wrestling. Yeah. It just haven't been gi classes. It sucks.
Why do you prefer the gi?
It's what I started with. Kung Fu, started off in the gi. Jiu-Jitsu when I went to Travis's gym, gi. You know, it's like, it's real martial arts.
Yeah, like the last thing that Kevin does before he goes in the octagon, you know, before he comes out, is he does his kata, you know, from Kung Fu.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like we do the warm up, he's all 100% warm, and then that's kind of his cool down. And that gets his head right, and he's ready. And it's like, you know, and this is, you know, it's part of the routine, and it's like, you know, Kevin's very, very traditional that way. You know?
Do you have a specific kata that you like to do before you warm up or when you, you're about to go out?
Yeah, to calm down, 10-point blocking system is the one to calm down. You know, they say 10-point blocking system, but it really should be called like 10-point breathing system. You know, and so you're really focusing on your breathing. And then I like combat pinyon. Like, I'm really, really fond of combat pinyon. So like the only forms that I'll still do is like I'll do 10-point blocking system, of course. I'll do combat pinyon. I'll do a self-defense form to the left and to the right. That's the original one we learned. And then I'll do SDM2. That's the second self-defense form that we learned. And I kind of suck at SDM2. That's why I still practice it. SDM1, self-defense forms left and right, the traditional one that for the whole art, 10 basic footworks. I do those. I do the footworks, you know, every couple days, or if I'm just bored, or if I'm naked in the shower. And then, you know, and then combat pinyon. I like to smoke a blunt and do combat pinyon. Yeah. And it's supposed to be like a scenery in a garden. You know, like you create the capital I. It's kind of like what you do. And then 10-point blocking system is just really good to just calm down, just relax. And, you know, it's like I want to teach it to my little brother, but I 14 years old and I still don't think he's patient enough to learn it. So, you know, It's a good one, though. I really love 10-point blocking system.
So you said you train with Shug is your strength and conditioning guy, but he's also works with your hands.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you have a Muay Thai coach? Do you work with someone that does kicks with you? Like,
no. So I'm traditional. I have, like, you know, I have my second degree black belt in Kung Fu, so I know kicks pretty well. But it's like I go out there and I get work with Bob, of course, and I love working with Bob. You know, shout out to Black Beast and them. Texas is officially warm again now that the balls are back. You know,
we were talking about Derek's KO victory over Curtis Blades before this fight, and it's just holy shit.
That shit was amazing.
That scary, scary human.
He can crack.
Yeah,
he can crack, and he keeps it too. That was the thing. The Volkov fight. You know, I remember calling that fight because he was down in the fight, and I remember it was like right before he knocked him out. We were talking about it. I said he can knock you out at any moment in the fight.
Yeah,
even deep into the third round, Derek could still knock you out.
Can Francis
all of a sudden,
do that?
Boom. I don't know.
We've never seen it.
I don't know.
He's never had to do it.
Yeah, we've never seen it. I don't know.
He didn't do it against Stipe that first time. You know, no. It's like,
yeah, that would have been the answer, huh?
Yeah, that would have been. You know,
yeah. It's just, you know, I don't know if Derek could do it against Stipe either. You know what I'm saying? It's like he's not there to hit.
Yeah.
And he's so experienced. He knows when to clinch with you. He knows when to get you down. He knows how to wear you out. So what Stipe was able to do, though, which was pretty shocking, was absorb some of the bigger shots that Francis throws.
Yeah.
And he went with them and he rolled with some shots. And, you know.
So
how's his eye now?
I don't know. You know, I mean, it got better enough that he was willing to fight DC a second time.
Yeah.
How is it now? I don't know.
Man, that's something. It's like, you know, you start losing eyes. Mm-hmm. It's like, this is all fun. But
like Nick Lentz just retired because he said he lost 40% of his vision.
No, thank you.
How does that happen? Yeah.
Pokes.
The pokes and then also trauma, because boxers get it. Mm-hmm. Boxers get it. You know, it's like you get hit and it's like it'll detach. You know, so it's like maybe the centrifugal force, whatever. You know, it makes that eye pop and then the retina detaches and then they have to go in there and do surgery and it's never right.
Bisping,
you know,
only has one eye.
That's pretty cool.
So you can take out his eye.
No, he has a lens cover.
A lens
cover. He puts
cover
over his eye. His eye has had so many surgeries on it that it looks weird. You know, it looks,
oh, okay.
If you see it's like you have two eyes. He has one eye that looks normal and one eye where the
can he see?
It looks like a giant pupil. No.
No.
You can barely see.
He can barely see.
And he fought like that.
Yeah.
For
how is he passing the eye exam?
I have no idea.
That's what I'm trying to figure out.
I have no idea.
Yeah, how did he pass the eye exam? Before my last fight, they thought I had a detached retina, you know, and I had to go to a different one. And I was like, oh, my God, you know, this is the end. It's like, you know, it's like crazy.
I don't know. They're doing different things to try to heal trauma to eyes. There's a guy named Andrew Huberman who's been on my podcast before, who's out of Stanford University, and they're doing these things with, I believe they're somehow or another engineering bacteria, and they inject this bacteria in your eye, and it repairs your eye, and it repairs vision, and yeah.
So they stick a needle in your eye?
Yeah.
Oh, how bad would that hurt?
That would not be, I don't like needles, so that would be terrible.
Yeah, not fun. But if it fixes your eye,
I'd do it.
I'd do it.
Yeah.
I just want to know how bad. I mean, I'd do it just to see how bad it hurt.
So is that uncomfortable? Is he said it, like wearing that thing over your eye? That's gonna be.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But I didn't know what he was doing. He was on my pod. He's since done it on his show. He's pulled the lens out and shown everybody what it is. But he was on my podcast. I'm like, dude, your eye looks great. Like, what did you do? And then afterwards, he shows me, pulls it out. He's like, yeah, I can't even fucking see.
Can't
like,
see now.
Wow.
That's crazy.
So he basically has like an artificial cover to his eye, you know. It's like a
Joe Frazier, you know, he was.
Yeah, there it is. Look at that. He's pulling it out. Damn. So that thing sits over his eye.
Yeah, Joe Frazier, you know, the first fight he ever wore contacts for was when he fought Big George
really?
Foreman. Yeah, so it's like that's one of the things that nobody really talks about in that fight is he was wearing contacts in that fight.
Well, back then contacts were glass too.
Right. And it's like, and so it's like, so they get, you know, he gets hit and they're going everywhere and he can't see.
No.
You know, so it's like, you know, that was part of the problem for
Why
that
the
fight.
Fuck.
Now cuz he was blind. He was
really?
Yeah, no, it's like, you know, Joe was basically legally blind at that point in time in his life.
From boxing.
Oh, my God. Like, and so it's like, you know, he drove for years without a driver's license, you know, from what I've read. Okay. You know, with, you know, he's out there driving. They said he drove fast, and it's like,
and he couldn't see.
He's driving by feel. So it's like, you know.
What? driving by feel.
My grandfather did it. He was like,
"Oh, you know,
what's that?
That's a curb. Don't go left."
Exactly.
It's a car that doesn't go left.
No. Just, you hit the curb. That means go left.
You just hit shit and bounce off of it and keep going.
Oh yeah, middle of the night driving. Yeah.
Middle of the night.
It's good stuff.
Yeah, if you're from the Northeast, you get shit over your windshield and you can't see.
Oh yeah,
and from snow and ice and.
Or if you're in Texas and, you know, last week, Derek Lewis ain't home. Yeah. You know.
How bizarre.
It's crazy. 100-year storm, something like that.
If that. We were talking about it. Like, there's no real record of anything that lasted that long. Like, that went through Austin and Houston and Dallas and froze everything
up. Did you
like
lose
that.
Power?
No, we got lucky. Didn't lose power. But, you know, pipes froze up.
Oh, your pipes froze?
Yeah, pipes froze up.
You know, it's so crazy. I was so mad. It's like the little hood apartment that I used to stay in.
Yeah.
Never lost power. My uncle was good the whole time. I moved into this nice new neighborhood, beautiful house, you know, and I lose power. My grandparents' house right around the corner, they lose power. I go back to the hood and everybody over there has power. I said, I knew I shouldn't have moved. Knew it, man.
Yeah, it was a weird random thing, but millions of people lost power, which is just so strange that it lasted for so long and then... You know, a lot of tragedies too.
Oh yeah, there was that boy that the mom found him. They were from Honduras, and they were living in a trailer, and their trailer lost power. And then, and she found him under a bunch of blankets. You know, he was trying to keep warm, and he froze to death. Oh. You know, it's like, and I think there's 20 some people that I read that died in Texas. So terrible, bad deal.
Bad deal. Sucks. So you were telling me your gym was only closed for a short amount of time.
For during COVID. The pandemic. Yeah. For during the pandemic, we closed down, you know, for that 6 weeks when the governor shut us down. And I mean, it's like, and we were, you know, Kevin had to fight. So it's like we were doing, you know, some training on the down low and stuff like that. But we had to. Kevin's going to fight.
No,
it's like, and,
no, it wasn't just because Kevin had
well,
a fight.
Well, Travis is going to lose his mind.
Travis is like, going crazy.
And then I vowed that it's like, you know, it's like as soon as it was over and it's like it made no change, I'm not shutting down again. You know, it's like they can shut us down, but it's like I'm not going to shut down. I'm not going to do that to my people. It's like
California is still shut down a year later.
Terrible.
That's insane. There's no jiu-jitsu in California legally a year
legally.
Later.
Legally.
It's crazy. Fucking bananas.
I was out in Vegas and you had to like, put your mask around your. You have to chin strap chin. Your mask.
Chin is so really. Yeah,
chin strap your mask in case the people come in. You can just pull it up. And
so
be a problem.
How are you supposed to train with that? That's dangerous.
Yeah. It's so silly.
It's
so silly. It doesn't make any sense.
No, it's like I mean I understand if you've got you know if you're physically you know you're older you have some sort of
well don't go train then.
Yeah don't go train don't yeah. go train don't
you,
be around
you
people
be in
that
a jiu-jitsu
gym. Yeah. It's like you know but it's like but for to tell a healthy person that you can't go train. It's like, that's crazy. You know, it's like, this is, you know.
Not only that, who are the people that are telling us we can't do this? They're not healthy.
No.
These are not wise people. They're just public health officials that are just deciding arbitrarily to close down outdoor dining when there's no evidence whatsoever that there's any spread from outdoor dining. Zero. Yeah.
Well, it's like, you know, I could walk around and start slapping ho-hos out of, you know, people's hands and saying, listen, that's going to kill you. Boom.
Not only is it going to kill you, but it's also going to make you more susceptible to the disease, which is going to make you transmit to more people.
Right.
That's real. Yeah. Also, they're talking about obese people that get COVID, they aspirate more. They cough more.
Right.
They have more issues. So you are literally likely to infect more people.
As they're telling us not to go outside.
Yeah.
Not to, you know, vitamin D is, you know, I think one of the biggest things that they found that, you know, helps to prevent, you know, COVID. The people that are, you know, were dying were, you know, vitamin D deficient. And, you know, it's like, and they're telling us not to go outside. 84%
of the people in the ICU, vitamin D deficient for COVID.
Right.
4% had sufficient levels of vitamin D for multiple studies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it's
vitamin D is giant. Do you take supplements?
No.
Nothing?
UFC sent me some supplements to take, and I tried it for a while, and I feel like I was getting more sleepy taking the supplements than I was just regular training and smoking weed.
Kevin's just a different animal.
Doesn't make any sense. Like, what supplements are they sending you?
I don't know.
Tranquilizers?
They sent me a bunch of stuff. But if anybody asks, I do take Recover Me USA. Yeah, I take that all day, every day. I swear I do.
Sure. super believable. Hard sell.
I don't know.
So you don't
take
anything, just eat?
Yeah,
eat and train.
Yeah,
getting
them
to eat right is, you know, difficult. You know, it's like, Kevin, you got to eat. You know, it's like, man, I'm just not hungry. Man, Kevin, you know, you got to eat.
Like,
you
what's your diet like? Why are you laughing?
Oh, man. See, me and my old lady, we just split, so I don't know what the diet's going to be like.
Is she cooking?
Yeah, she cooks everything. She cooks really good, too. Probably go back to Icon Meals. Yeah.
Oh, well, that's a good move.
Yeah. Right? My grandparents live right around the corner, though, so grandma usually cooks, so I'll just go over there and snag a few plates and stuff. Yeah, it's like breakfast. I usually like, you know, it's like now that I'm single, I ain't gonna be making no bacon. So I'll probably just crack like 2 eggs, you know what I mean? And give one to my son. I'll take the other one.
You gotta
you
eat
know,
more than that.
Throw it on the bread.
You gotta eat more than an egg. Yeah, that's you gotta eat crazy more talk. Really?
I feel good like that. You know, it's like
you like to eat light?
Yeah, just snack.
What do you walk around at? Like, what do you weigh?
196 pounds.
Oh, that's not much.
Sometimes 194.
When you see guys like Paulo Costa, that, you know, he looks like Jesus Christ.
I'd kill him.
Yeah, how's he making weight? How's he making weight? That's 214 pounds, I think he weighed in.
Yeah,
after the fight,
insane.
That's crazy.
I used to fight 170 pounds, and then I missed weight for like 2 California fights. You know, both times I just really wasn't taking the weight cut serious, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
And it was like they start talking about how you can't cut so much weight in California.
Right. 10% of your body weight.
Yeah. For fights, and I was like, oh well, I'm probably gonna have to go up to 85. And I was at the time I was going back and forth between California and Texas a lot to fight. So I was like, well, I'll just stay at 85. You know, it's like half the time guys are out of shape anyways, 85. I'll just stay at 85. You know, and it's like, and then I lost Lovato at 85. So I was like, yeah, I'm really going to stay at 85. I'm going to get that fight back. You know, and it's like, so it just makes sense not to cut that much weight. You know, and it's like, I could probably make 170 with the nutritionist, but we like the way that I act and we like the way I feel at 85. So
I like Kevin at 85 better. It's like he's stronger. It's like we have better training partners for him at that weight. You know, he gets down to when he's lighter. It's like I prefer him at 85.
You certainly have the frame for it.
Yeah.
You know, that's just it's such a big advantage to be long.
He's stupid strong. You know, it's like Kevin, you know, it's like, yeah, put him up against anybody as far as strength at 85.
Well, you certainly show it with the one punch power, you know. When Joaquin Buckley made that highlight reel crazy kick, and then I was like, yeah, does everybody forget?
Yeah. One fight ago.
It was an amazing kick. It was an amazing KO.
That's my son. I'm proud of him, you know. I'm forever gonna own that, you know. He's my kid, and then I got my other kid who can't freaking pass drug tests.
Who's that?
These two kids, the Ontiveros guy, he stays in Houston, the one that I fought. Those two are my, everybody thinks that I can't, I call everybody my kids that I beat. No, it's only the two guys that I brought into the UFC. You know what I mean? Like, I brought both those guys into the UFC and then I finished them. You know, those are my kids, you know, and it's like, yeah, those are my kids. You know, there's no way around it.
It was interesting that fight made Buckley like sort of this viral sensation, deservedly so. It was wild. Right. Okay.
Crazy kid.
Nice.
Wild. But then you don't, people like forgot. Like, it was just one fight ago. You KO'd him with one punch.
Yeah.
But this is social media fans.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, this isn't real hardcore fans. It's like, you know, and you know, it's like the hardcore guys know, you know, it's like, I know what Kevin did to him. You know, it's like, don't forget, you know, he's human.
Yeah. It's, the whole division right now is in such an interesting place with, Adesanya about to fight Blachowicz, you know, that
who you got there.
I don't know. Look, Israel's the most interesting striker, I think, in that division in terms of, like, he's got so much kickboxing experience. He's so good at reads and feints and setting you up.
One question, though, Joe.
Yes.
Does he have a black belt in Kung Fu?
No, he doesn't.
All right.
You and him had words, right? Like, was it after one of your victories you were yelling at him or something?
Yeah.
Like
it started before that.
Yeah.
He
tried to punk me, like, my first day on the job. You know what I mean? Like,
first day on the job?
Yeah. Like, I was...
He shoulder checked Kevin in the back. You know, it's
really?
Like walking through
the Thiago fight, right?
Yeah, the Thiago fight. Yeah, and it's like, so Kevin has been mad about this since then. You know, it's like when something happens to Kevin, it's like, you know, it just festers in his brain, and it's just, you know, he's mad. You know, he's angry that this happened. You know, it's like he does not. You know, Kevin just doesn't like to be disrespected, and he felt disrespected in that moment. And it's like, you know, whether or not Stylebender remembers it or whatever, you know, it happened.
And you know, it's like simple as it is. You did it, and you know, it's like you can say, "Oh, I didn't do anything," and it's like, "All right, well."
And then they had
fine.
Another altercation, you know, in the hotel. You know, it's like where everybody's staying, you know, getting ready for this during quarantine UFC. They had that other little altercation, and you know, and. And then after the fight, then he was there, and then Kevin was yelling at him, and he yelled something back. And
yeah,
you think that's an inevitable encounter?
I mean, you know.
Seems like it has to.
I think if he wins at 205, he doesn't come back to 85.
You think so?
I don't think he comes back to 85. So. No. I have this theory,
money.
Though.
Money.
Yeah.
He'll be after money fights after that.
Do you think there's more money at 205 than 85?
Probably. I know, it's like the heavyweights make more money than anybody. So it's like,
right, but he's not going to go up to heavyweight. Do you really think he will?
I think if John Jones wins the heavyweight title, I think Izzy goes up there and, you know, fights
John.
He fought
a heavyweight in kickboxing.
Yeah.
You know, it's like in one. You know, and won, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's like he's a talented guy. He's really, 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 really good.
It's different when you add grappling, though.
Yeah.
But he's good. He's undefeated. I mean, it's hard to knock what he does. The guy,
he's good.
He does fantastic work. Yeah. What do you think, he has been knocked out before. So,
yeah. Well, that Pereira fight.
Yeah.
That guy's got fucking crazy power, man.
I know. And I know somebody
like
him.
Is he ever going to come to MMA?
Oh, like you?
Who has crazy power?
Kevin Holland?
I mean, you know. Hmm. You know, sometimes I squeeze things too tight. You know?
Yeah, he's in MMA now. He's fighting for LFA. Yeah,
really?
That'd be
yeah.
LFA.
Yeah, he's got a ruthless KO. His first fight in MMA in a while. You know, yeah. That they put up. See if you can find that Alex Pereira. He knocked this dude out with a left hook. Same left hook he knocked Izzy out.
Yeah.
He's got a crazy left hook.
What
man.
Weight is he at?
Well, he's got two titles in Glory. He's got the 85 and the 205 pound title in Glory.
God, beast. Yeah,
he's a beast. But I don't know what his ground game's like. I have no idea what he has.
But Izzy just got his purple belt, I think.
From Atos, right?
Yeah, from Atos. Yeah. He's out there for like a week.
I might give him a stripe. I'm allowed to do that? I'm allowed to give people stripes?
I don't know. You know, it's like...
Well, how's that work? Once you're a black belt, what are you allowed to give?
You think you got to be the black belt for 3 years before you can start ranking people officially.
Here it is, which is boom. Yeah.
Got to get your first stripe.
Nice. Face plant.
Yeah.
Can we see it again?
Yeah, here goes.
Boom.
Damn. It's a smooth left hook, too. It's almost like it's right here, and then it's just right there.
It's full rotation. The thing about him is, like, when he throws things, he touches you, boom. Like, he'll throw things, and he looks, like, calm and relaxed. Like, look at that kick. Boom. Yeah. Like, that kick's not full power, right? No. He's just reaching up with that kick. So, go back a little bit, Jamie, and show that again. When you see how he touches guys with stuff, bang!
I like that.
God damn, that hurt.
Crazy power. And he does that to everybody. Crazy. He does that with the big gloves, with the little gloves. It's a different fucking story. Yeah. You know?
I'd fight him.
I'm sure you would. You'd fight anybody.
Kevin
I'm sure you'd fight Satan.
Kevin has to fight, though. It's like, you know, with the UFC making him wait this long is driving him crazy.
So this is the question. With Adesanya about to fight Blachowicz, you got this situation now with 185 belt is potentially in limbo. Mm-hmm. You know, does that bother you when you see guys who are champions fighting other champions and it sort of ties up both weight classes?
Nope. See all this
Kevin
gold?
Doesn't care.
I see a lot of gold.
I just want to fight. It doesn't have to be for the belt. You know, it's like...
But I mean, when you look at the rankings, like obviously now you're a top contender.
I want Kelvin Gastelum next.
That's
I mean,
who you want.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah,
that's a great fight. I want to do him worse than what Izzy did him. You know what I mean? And it's like, I want to go out there and have that type of war. You know, it's like, I oblige. You know, it's like, if not, you know, it's like, do I have to go back a little bit? It's like, who's a good fight? Who's a fun fight? You know, it's like, who can keep me active? You know, it's like, that's what I want.
So right now you're just in the mind state of just keep going and keep improving.
He wants to fight name fighters, but he wants to be active. You know, it's like him having to wait till March is painful for Kevin.
Is that what's going on?
Yeah.
So they have a fight scheduled for you in March?
Yeah, Brunson.
Yeah, Brunson in March. But it's just, you know, it's so far away.
It's just so far away.
So you really want to fight like almost every month?
Yeah, every other month it would be idealistic so that way I can spend a little bit of time with the family and the body can get a little bit of rest, you know, mm-hmm. just being realistic. But every other month, like realistically speaking here, for like my mental health and for the people around me, it's like if I fought every other month, it would be perfect. It'd be great for everybody in my life.
And what do you like for a 3-round fight? How many weeks do you like for a camp?
I don't need a camp for three rounds. I don't need a camp for 5 rounds. We need 3 to 4 weeks.
You know, coach, last year, you know, he was taking those fights on, you know, week notice, you know, week and a half notice, you know, and they were 3-round fights, and it's like, you know, it's like, and now he was training, you know, because we just get done fighting, and then he, you know, you might fight again, come back to the gym, you know, it's like he might take a week off, he might not, you know, some of the times he wasn't taking a week off, he was just jumping back in the gym, and so he was just staying busy, and it's like, you know, so he didn't really have a camp. the whole year, except for the last one.
We had to camp the last one.
The last one.
For Jacare.
For Jacare, we did.
It was Jack Hermanson.
And
we were going to get ready for Jack. And then they said I had COVID, so I just stayed in the house for a couple days, like about a week. And then we went back to the gym for a couple days, and then we had to go to Vegas.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like, I don't know. I think if you train consistently, like, you know, people are like, oh, I'm getting ready for this fight. I'm getting ready for this fight. Fuck you. I'm getting ready for war. You know what I mean? It's like, who wants it? They can come get it. You know, it's like you give me enough time to cut weight to 170 pounds. Coach don't like it, but if that's what it takes to catch a fight, I'll catch a fight. If I have to go up to 205 and my body can somehow make it happen, if I have to put little egg weights inside my draws, I'll do that. I've done that before to make 196. You know, it's like whatever. You know, it's like I just want to fight. You know, it's like fight as much as possible.
Do you consider 170? Like, is there, like, if they called you up?
And, I will. I will. But you know, to cut the 170, either A, I have to be sitting out and not having a fight coming up, and so I'm that pissed off that I don't have a fight coming up. I'm like, Coach, we just have to do this. And Coach would be like, all right, fuck it, we got to do it. You know, or...
Kevin can make 170 and
for a fight that
weeks.
We like.
Yeah,
two weeks. 2 weeks from now,
yeah.
You can make
really?
170.
Yeah, as long as I'm not running around going crazy, and it's like, and the older I get, the less I eat crazy. And it's like, I used to eat, you know, it's like, you know, the grandma box of cookies is like the vanilla ones, there's like 6 to 8 in them. I like the peanut butter ones. I used to eat a whole box, you know, 6 packs of those one whole night. I don't do that anymore.
They're fucking good.
You know?
They are good.
I can't handle it. Yeah, I can't handle it anymore. I don't even drink milk anymore. You know?
Really?
It's like, so much peanut butter. I mean, we actually looked it up. If you intake too much peanut butter in your body, it fucks up your ingestive system, your insides and stuff. So
peanut butter?
Yes. It's fucking crazy. You can Google it. I've done way too much peanut butter over the years.
You've ruined your body with peanut butter?
I've ruined my body with peanut butter. It's fucked up, man.
How is peanut butter bad for you? I've never even heard of that before.
I never thought it was bad for you. I always thought it was good for you. You know, and so it's like I'm just constantly eating peanut butter all day, every day. You know,
I thought peanut butter is high in protein. Peanuts are good for you.
That's where I've been getting my protein at from years. You know, and
it was bothering your stomach, though, right?
It's just tearing my stomach
up. Yeah, he was having problems when he was eating
peanut butter. But what form are you having peanut butter in?
Oh, man. Like
with what?
You name it. Like peanut butter cookies, whether they're
homemade,
store-bought.
Okay, but then you got cookies.
Store-bought.
So here you got flour and sugar.
Can't be the cookies.
Yeah, and then I mean.
What else?
Peanut butter was with everything.
Like what else? That's
like
bothering you.
Pop-Tart peanut butter.
Okay, you got fucking Pop-Tarts. You got sugar and you got flour. You got bullshit food. I don't think it's the peanut butter, bro.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't just go...
if you were, I bet you'd be fine.
I probably would.
Because, like, you're talking about your insides. You're talking about inflammation. You're going to get that for sure from flour, from gluten, from sugar.
See,
yeah.
Should have fucking called Joe.
You know? Yeah, I don't think it's the peanut butter.
So I can just dick a spoon and just...
I mean, look, I'm pretty far from a nutritionist, but I do know that there's... If you're having peanut butter with Pop-Tarts, I don't think it's the fucking peanuts.
Joe, you're going to make me Google this right now. I'm telling you. It was because I switched it. I even switched up what I was putting peanut butter on. Like, I'll just put peanut butter on this and I'll probably feel better this
week. Like what else?
Yeah, it's, you know...
Cake?
No. Yes.
Peanut butter and cake.
Yes,
can you imagine
that?
What the hell was wrong in the world that you started eating peanut butter and cake?
I start smoking when I wake up, right? And then by the time I go to bed, all I want is peanut butter on anything.
I get it.
And it's like, if I can't have peanut butter on something.
I understand that, but I really don't think it's the peanut butter.
It's the peanut butter, Joe.
Bro,
it's the peanut butter.
I'm 99% sure it's other bullshit that comes with the peanut butter.
As long as he's eating.
Yeah. So is that a thing with him?
You have to get him to eat. It's hard.
Yeah, I
when you were saying, like,
hot
you want him to have more than one egg with breakfast. Is that legitimately what he has with breakfast?
I don't know. You know, it's like, I just, hey, what'd you eat today? And he'll tell me, and it's like, okay, you need to go eat.
So UFC has a meal prep company that they work with, right? They do a lot of meal prep where they'll like, the Performance Institute.
Icon Meals?
Yeah. Is that Icon? Is that
no,
who they
the
work with? They work with someone else,
that's
too.
That's Throne. Performance Institution is no, it's not Throne. Yeah, it is Throne. It's something like that.
I don't remember, but I know they do it with fighters. I think Kelvin, in one of his last UFC embedded episodes, they showed the meal prep that they had with him, I think.
And yeah.
Some fighters. I know they, you know, those plastic meal prep things.
Yeah, those things. Yeah.
So
Icon Meal makes some really good ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have like this ravioli trifecta.
Okay, trifecta. That's there it is. So that's the UFC's meal prep.
Yeah, we get those
company.
Every fight week. Fight week, they give us trifecta, and it's a.
Kevin doesn't like them.
You don't like them?
It's horrible, man. But it's
no peanut butter.
No peanut butter. No flavor in anything. But it's part of the program, so I eat it. It's just
he's not happy about it.
Yeah, it's like I eat that, and I don't even have to cut weight. I'm at 185 pounds just from eating that crap.
Really?
And it's like, yeah. It's like, and then they put something on every meal that makes you poop. Every meal makes you poop. You eat, 10 to 15 minutes later, you got poop.
But isn't that probably good?
I already poop a lot. I don't need anything more than I already poop. You know, it's like,
it's not a problem.
After a certain time, it's too much poop.
I understand. Know? Yeah. It can be an issue.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's good though that you don't have to cut weight if you're taking that stuff. If you're eating trifecta meals, your energy's good.
Yeah, I feel, man.
He cuts a little bit of water. That's, you know, it's like he's cut, you know, it's like he's walking into Vegas at 196 pounds. You know, it's like by the time he really starts cutting weight, you know, it's like he's 192 or 93, but he's cut back. He's only eating what they're giving him, and then he rehydrates after. You know, he cuts a little bit of water and goes. Weighs in and he's good.
And when you rehydrate, do you have like a specific? Do you use certain electrolytes? Do you have something that you take? Trifecta as well.
Yeah. After that, the food's pretty good.
They but I mean, what about electrolytes? Like, do you drink a drink?
They have T1, T2, and then T3.
Oh.
And then it's like they have different things in them. They have like a little slip that has like all these different stuff that they put in there. Yeah. And one's salty, one's sweet, one kind of tastes like a beefed up Pedialyte. It's pretty good. I like it. You know, it's the drinks are really good. You know, it's the meals that you eat all week before the fight that suck. You know, I just don't like it.
You just like things that are more flavorful.
Yeah.
Well, Andy, you got to keep in mind, it's like fight week, he's not smoking. So it's like, you nothing know, it's tastes like, good. Nothing really. Tastes good.
Skinny fats taste fantastic fight week. Skinny Fats. Shout out to Skinny Fats.
What's Skinny Fats?
It's right down the street from the little hotel that we stay at. There's a little place called Skinny Fats. Oh, they serve burgers and fried pickles.
Yeah. Oh, it's in Vegas?
Yeah, yeah.
It's pretty good. Okay. What has it been like, this whole training and competing during the pandemic? Like, do you like fighting with no audience? Is it weird?
Yeah. It's like takes me back. You know, it's almost like street fights, one-on-one. Mm. You know, you just go out there. Pop, 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 pop. Somebody pulls you off. You're like, oh, is this the police? Nope. It's the bro. It's time to be done. We're out of here. It's a wrap. I whoop his ass, click a little cash. We're good, sea bass. That's all it is to it. I love it.
Yeah. Do you prefer large crowds?
I love a large crowd. I love a large crowd.
But it doesn't bother you to have no crowd?
Mm-mm. However you want it, we can get it.
I've been saying it's interesting calling those fights because you hear everything. Everything. Yeah. And I always feel like so lucky I get to be there. Like the Usman Gilbert Burns fight. Last weekend.
That was crazy.
I was like, Jesus Christ, like, I can't believe I'm right here. Like, this is, there's no one in here. Yeah. And it was like 20 people in the whole building. I get to watch that.
Well, it's terrible for the fight. If you fight on the undercard, then you're like, they kick you out of that place and you got to go back to your hotel room. And it's like, you can't watch the fights on the TV. So you're watching it on your phone.
Really? So if you're on the undercard, you can't watch from the
dressing room? No, they kick you out. It's like, you know, so it's like, if you're there, you know, it's like, so we're trying to watch the fights. You know, it's like at the end of the day, we're all fans. We want to watch the fights and we can't watch them.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's terrible. Yeah.
Why don't they have a training, like a screening room?
They need to.
Fuck yeah. That place is giant. They have everything there.
We do fight, media, home.
Yeah, and then they send us back, and it's like, you know, so it
can't even stop again
underneath. Yeah, it's like if they just put the damn fights in the the damn hotel room, that'd be okay.
Right.
You know, it's like, but we can't even watch them there. So
that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And then you gotta watch them on the phone.
And they don't have the green room
anymore. Everybody's tested. This is what I don't understand. Like, once you get there, you're all tested. But all these people are still wearing masks.
Well, they make us.
I don't understand it.
Yeah, we have to wear a mask. We get tested three times at least before we go there. Everybody that's working there, you got tested.
Too. Everyone's tested. That's what doesn't make sense to me.
So it's like, why do I got to wear a mask? Why can't I hang out and watch the fights?
Right. Once you're tested.
Right.
I feel like you should just be able to sit down and watch the fights.
Yeah, that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah.
I'd like to sit down and watch some fights.
Bring us some food, too.
Yeah.
How about
that? Yeah. Wouldn't that be nice?
It'd be amazing.
Is this get trifecta on standby. They should have, like, post-fight meals.
Yeah. Well, like, they used to have the green room.
Delicious chicken and waffles, and like, meatloaf, something
good. I'm getting
hungry. Right? Well, something good.
Before
steaks.
The pandemic, you know, they would have food, except for China. Room. China, that wasn't food in China.
No?
No, that was terrible.
What did they get in China?
It wasn't food. It was just we couldn't get real food in China.
Like, what do you mean? What'd you get?
It was just nasty.
Oh my God,
it's like
dude.
It was just It was terrible.
It was bad.
It's like,
really?
Yeah, it's like even like,
I like sushi.
Put it this way. So we were there for Thanksgiving, and the UFC, like the brass there, was apologizing to us. You know, it's like we're there for Thanksgiving. We're having a Thanksgiving meal. The UFC is putting it on, and they're apologizing. Listen, this is as good as we could get.
What was it?
It was, yeah, they had a turkey, you know, but everything else.
Well, sucked. They got to eat a turkey.
Yeah, you didn't get to eat it.
I didn't get to eat shit.
You couldn't wait. It's like, you didn't get to eat it.
That was horrible.
Yeah.
So that was the worst experience with food?
Which, yeah. Oh, my God.
I almost got arrested for ketchup.
What?
Yeah.
I wasn't there for that.
Yeah, you almost got arrested for ketchup. What do you mean?
Cowboy and Suge were like, Kevin, we're in a foreign country, bro. Calm down. I was like, fuck you. I want my ketchup. And I was, like, blocking the kitchen. And they were like, you can't do this. I was like, give me my fucking ketchup. And they were like, whoa. No. And they were like, you need to sit down.
Why are we so amped up over ketchup?
We just got done cutting weight. And I wanted ketchup and hot sauce for my eggs. You know, and they didn't want to give me ketchup. I found hot sauce, a little bottle. Just couldn't find any ketchup, you know.
And this is in China.
Yeah.
China food's rough, man.
Yeah?
Yeah. It's like, I mean, it's just, there's no incentive for anybody to, you know, it's like, you know, it's a problem with communism. You know, it's like there's just no incentive. You know, it's like, you know, in this third, fourth generation communism.
They had good breakfast. So. The hotel had good breakfast.
No.
No?
I liked it. No. They had cold French toast. It was good. It was good. No. I got used to it. I asked for salt and pepper. They brought me salt and paper.
Oh, no.
I was like, what do I do?
You thought you were going to write something down?
No. It was like, what? I was like, oh, okay, whatever.
So what we could do to improve the UFC Performance Institute, the Apex Center, like have a room where there's couches and a big-ass TV.
We can social distance. Fighters, it's fine.
Why do you even have to? I don't get it.
But if they give us food and let us watch the fights, then I'll social distance.
I get it.
In fact, I'm in favor of social distancing.
They're treating your favor of it. But they're treating this virus like it's a demon. It's so silly. It's just a virus.
Yes.
It's not that much different from other viruses. It's just contagious, and it's bad if you get it.
But I would guess it's the lawyers. The lawyers are probably. It's got to be the lawyers saying, listen, you're going to be liable, blah, blah, blah.
But they're loosening things up. It's more loose now than it's ever been before, particularly in Vegas.
They're getting better?
Yeah, they're getting better.
Man, the last time we were there, it was you know, when we were there in December. Was it December or November?
December.
Yeah, you know, that was the worst one. You know, we couldn't go out on our own. They had to go with us. It's like if we went to the grocery store, they're driving you there in the car. You couldn't take an Uber. You know, it's like December was worse than the other months that we were there. But it's like, you know, I hope you're right. I hope it is better.
Well, look, kudos to the UFC just for doing it.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
When they first started doing it, when was the first fights? April
May.
Or some shit? May?
May.
May. When they first started having the first fights in Florida, everybody was like, you're going to kill everybody. Everyone was so scared. It was like such a weird thing that they were deciding to do this. But now every sport does it.
Right.
You know, I mean, after a while, they're like, look, we got to live.
Yeah, I was happy.
Well, you got to make money. It's like money makes the world go around. And it's like the money stops. Guess what? Food doesn't going to come. You got to pay for all this stuff. You know, it's like the world, you know, you have to make money. You've got it. And it's like you're shutting down the world is not a solution.
Well, also, if you're a 25-year-old fighter, that is, you're in your fucking prime, and now you're going to lose a whole year of competition. You're going to lose, if you're in California, you're really going to lose a whole year of training. Because, unless you're just lying and locking the door.
And that's what they have to do.
They have to. You're not allowed to train. Like, your jiu-jitsu just goes away.
Yeah, it's like Muhammad Ali. Muhammad Ali lost 3 years for the war. And it's like, and he never looked the same.
Never looked the same.
It's like when he, you know, when he was beating up Floyd Patterson or who's that other guy that wouldn't call him Muhammad Ali. They, you know, referred to him as Cassius Clay, and he just beat the shit out of him for 15 rounds.
Yeah. And then the Cleveland Big Cat Williams fight, which is the last fight before they took away his title for 3 years. But then when he came back after fighting Jerry Quarry, his body just
never looked the same.
Looked soft. It just didn't look the same.
I read that he didn't train.
For 3 years at all.
He didn't run. He didn't do anything. And it's like, you know, his first day back, he walks into the gym, puts on his gloves, and went and sparred, one of the contenders and beat the shit out of him. Okay, I'm good. I'll fight. And, you know, it's like, is this another very, very special athlete? You know, it's like, what the fuck? You know, how does this work? You know, that you take 3 years off and you come back and still going to beat up most everybody.
It's too bad that he took that time off.
Yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate.
It's horrible that they stole from 27 to 30.
Right.
The prime of his career. Yeah.
Yeah.
But this is like.
That would suck.
with COVID, it's such a strange thing that in California, they literally don't allow you to train. Like, it's not like you could all get tested and then train. Like, if they just had that rapid antigen test at the desk, you take, you have to wait 15 minutes before you can train.
What's that cost, though?
I don't know. I think they get it down to about $20 per test.
Yeah, but that's, you know, then you're adding that into your training costs.
Yeah, it's
you
not
know,
good.
Lots of fighters couldn't afford to train. You know,
it's not like, good. Yeah. No, it's not ideal. But I feel like it's better than nothing.
Listen, you got a fever, you got a runny nose, don't come in. You know, it's like if you're healthy, you're not coughing, you're not, you know, it's like you feel good, come train. You know, it's like, and other than that, stay home.
Right, you're not grappling in a nursing home.
No.
Right.
It's like, yeah, no. It's like, and you're I understand if you got a family that you got to protect and stuff like that,
don't come in. Yeah.
But don't tell me I can't come in.
That's the thing, right? It's the telling people what they can and can't do, and who are the people that are telling you what you can and can't do, and what are they basing it on? Because a lot of it's not based on science, because if it was, they would not have ever blocked outdoor dining. They wouldn't have stopped that, because there's no evidence that shows that outdoor dining is spreading it.
Well, did you see that lady in California? And then the movie thing opened up beside her.
Yeah, she had an outside thing that she had spent thousands of dollars to set up for her restaurant, and they told her she has to shut down. And literally, when they told her she has to shut down, across the parking lot is this enormous setup for a movie theater.
Right,
and they're eating outside.
Not a movie theater, a movie set.
And they're eating outside because the movie unions, the filmmakers unions. They all the different movie companies, they spend a lot of money and they influence politicians.
Right. And you know that they all want to.
It's
terrible, it's, you know, because it's like this lady spent, you know, I don't know how much money,
and she
it's
was
like,
barely hanging on,
right?
Barely and, hanging on anyway.
Did anybody help her?
I don't know. I think there was a GoFundMe. Yeah, there was a GoFundMe that helped her, but. Fuck those
but
people.
Like, but it's, but
fuck
think
all
about
those
it. It's
people.
It's like it's going to be thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars that she's losing. You know,
75% of all restaurants in Los Angeles don't exist anymore.
Yeah, where do people go eat now in L.A.?
Alberto's.
You got it. Well, that's the thing. Those fucking fast food places are still open.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of like
Alberto's.
Bad, unhealthy choices are still open.
You can still go get carne asada fries.
Of course.
For real, those things are good.
I'm sure they are.
It's hard to get in Texas. Have you tried to get carne asada fries since you've been?
I've not tried to get carne asada fries. No. I generally don't fuck with fries.
What?
Yeah.
Fries?
I like a little every now and then. I'll have one or two.
Fries?
Yeah.
Joe, fries?
They're just not good for you. Listen, peanut butter, man.
Joe goes on. Joe goes on lots of different diets. You know, he'll do the all meat diet. He'll do the vegan thing. You did the vegan thing for a little while, didn't you?
Not really. No, I did. When I was in my Taekwondo days, I was a vegetarian for like 6 months.
Really?
To try to lose weight. Yeah.
Was your Taekwondo days? Was that during Fear Factor days?
No, it was before that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, back when I was in high school.
Hey,
when
you were
in high school.
You know, Fear Factor.
Yeah.
Man, that's the first TV show me and my mom ever like sat down and watched together, like like wanting to watch. I'm not talking about like her making me watch Lifetime shit. I'm talking about like we wanted to watch it.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a fun show.
Cool. Yeah, it was pretty cool. Yeah. You don't miss it?
No. No.
You wouldn't like just do it one more time?
No. It's over. I did so many of them. I did it for 6 years, and then it came back and did another 6 episodes.
Well, look.
It's a long fucking time, man.
I just wanted to let you know. Had you told me this was, like, my interview to get into a Fear Factor situation, when my transmission blew, I'd have put that bitch in reverse and drove it all the way here.
Yeah. Well, you would tell everybody what happened. Do you have a 67 Impala?
Yeah, I was smashing here.
Is it 67 or 69?
67. No, 67. Actually, 68. My bad. It's a 68. 68. 68. My
Beautiful cars.
Yeah, my Bel Air is a 67. The Impala is a 68. And I was driving. I was going about 115. I was smoking. And I started seeing all this smoke. And I look around. And I'm like, yo, dude, this blunt is hitting hard. And like, I turn around. And I'm like, oh, shit, my car is smoking. So I pull over. And I look down the bottom, it's a bunch of pink shit, and I'm like, oh, this is not good. I taste it, and it's transmission fluid. Okay, I didn't taste it. I didn't taste it.
That was on the way here.
Yeah, I was on the way here.
On the way here.
I was smashing. I was going like 115. You know, it was doing good.
Now, is that car set up to go 115? Like, do you have real brakes on it? Like,
Yeah, I got disc brakes all the way around. I have I beefed up the motor. It's originally like a 350, 360, something like that. It's beefed up to like a 404.
So you're into cars?
Yeah. I'm into spending money, Joe. You know, It's like Dana White said those were money pits, and he was like, get that car. So I was like, oh, money pit? and you're telling me to get the car. So, yeah, I'm enjoying it. And they look really cool. And, like, man, they turn heads, you know, and it's like everybody's watching me. And
you don't have to tell me. I'm a big fan of those old cars.
Yeah.
I love them.
I love it. I got a 75 Dodge Plymouth at the house, too, a Duster. So while this one's down, I'll probably just hop in the Duster for a few days. Yeah, that'd be pretty cool.
You, when you came from Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series to the UFC, why, I don't understand why, this is just me. I like when guys talk a lot. I like a lot of shit talking. I think it's fun. I think it makes people interesting. It makes, especially in the sport, like the more attention, the more conflict, the more personality that you have, the more you're marketable.
Yeah.
But you had some, there was some tension with the UFC in the beginning.
It was during the fight. So it's like during the fight, you know, so quiet on the Contender. You can hear everything. And Kevin's talking. Kevin talks when he fights. I like it when Kevin talks because it means that he's relaxed. He's doing his thing. You know, it's a good thing. Dana did not like it.
And I don't understand
like,
that.
Well, it's like, you know, Kevin, he felt like, you know, because I talked to Dana afterwards and he's like, why didn't he finish him? And it's like, well, there wasn't danger. You know, it's like Kevin has to have danger. If there's danger, so it's like the quality of the – Kevin's going to – If the level of fighter is here, Kevin will fight here. Okay. Mm-hmm. If the level of fighter is here, Kevin will fight here. Okay. And it just keeps going up and up and up and up. So the better the fighter gets, you know, the better Kevin's going to fight. If the guy isn't very good, it's not going to be a highlight reel knockout. You know, it's like, and that's nothing against the guy that we fought. I don't remember his name. You know, but it's like, you know, it's like that's nothing against him. It's just, you know, at that time and stuff like that, you know, he wasn't, you know, bringing out the best in Kevin. And it's like, you know, Kevin kind of needs that. You know, he needs to have a little fear, a little danger, you know, the chance that somebody can do something bad to him. Yeah, in order for him to perform. If not, he'll just fuck around.
You agree with that, Kevin?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I'm self-defense, you know? It's like kung fu, you know, traditional martial arts, self-defense. Jiu-jitsu, it's supposed to be for self-defense, you know? It's like everything I do is self-defense. So it's like if you're not coming at me and giving me a real reason to fight, there's no real reason to fight.
But you're telling us guys now, they're like, I don't want to get fucked up. Maybe we'll just like...
If they chill, I mean, you know, the old me would chill. The new me is like, I want all the smoke. You know, it's like, I finally realized I really, really just like, that's what keeps me good. And, you know, that's what keeps me going. Just going out there and having a good hard fight. It's not about who wins. Not about who loses. It's not about none of that. It's about going out there and having a great time. You know, this is a party, you know, and March 20th, I get to be the life of the party. That's the main event. So we're going to go out there and make sure that everybody's pleased and everybody had a good party. And we're going to have a good, good time. You know, if we can do that again, like, 6 weeks later, perfect. 4 weeks later, even better.
Well, you realize also, if you like to spend a lot of money, this is the best way to make a lot of money. To
just fight.
And fight and be exciting.
Dude.
Like, the more exciting you can be, the more marketable you are. But when Daniel Nett brought you back, when he's calling you Big Mouth, he brought you back. Like, then you showed, like, regardless whether you talk too much, you could fight your fucking ass off.
Yeah.
And then I can't imagine you almost didn't get into the UFC.
Yeah.
That, to me, that is bananas.
Right. It's crazy, right?
When I look at how good he's doing.
Right.
And what a top contender you are. It's fucking crazy to me that just because of talking.
Right. Yeah. It's I like him talking. You know, it's like I've had other refs that, you know, like local Texas
referees. I don't like
Texas
when referees tell you not to
Don.
Tell
us.
Like,
Don
Turnage. That's not your job. That's not your job. That's
Don
not your job
Turnage,
to tell.
My guy Don, he hates it. He's like, Kev, when I'm reffing you, just shut the fuck up.
No.
You're not doing anything. There's no rules out there that say you can't talk. It's like,
yeah, why is it?
You know,
why do referees say that?
I don't know. It's a mistake. Let them fight. You know, Jack Johnson fought. When Jack Johnson fought back in the day, they said that he talked the whole fucking time.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, and it's like he's talking shit. And it's like one of the best boxers of all time is out there talking shit. It's like, I like it that Kevin fought.
Muhammad Ali.
Right.
Yeah.
Talk
he's shit.
Fucking with you.
Yeah.
I mean, what's my name?
Yeah.
Bam Bam. You know, it's like,
this
what's my name?
Always existed. It's
you ever played Dominoes?
Existed. No.
Oh. Well.
I know people talk a lot of shit, though. I've watched movies.
It's part of the culture, baby. It's what we do. You know, we talk some shit when we're having a good time. You know, you're competitive. You talk some shit. You're having a good time. You talk some shit.
Well, Connor constantly talks shit when he fights. Like,
Khabib.
Yeah.
Khabib.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, Khabib.
Yeah.
Fucking.
Let's talk now. He's beating the shit out of him. Come on, let's talk. Let's talk now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't.
You think Khabib comes back?
I hope he comes back because I'm selfishly, but I also hope he doesn't.
I hope he doesn't.
Part of me loves the fact that the guy retired undefeated, mauled everybody they put in front of him, barely lost a round his entire career.
Right.
Went out with a hard fought victory over a fucking super tough guy in Justin Gaethje, and that's it.
Yeah.
Great story.
It's a great story.
It's a good story.
Yeah.
I hope it's over.
Could be better.
It's like, you know, I would have liked to have saw him fight GSP. You know, it's like that would have been fun to watch.
No. Him versus Usman, you think?
Yeah.
Wow. Goes double up champ. To 170?
Yeah, these days and time, you can't be the GOAT unless you're a double champ. Fucking be a triple champ. You know? It's like, do it. What's stopping you from doing it? You mauled everybody at 155.
Yeah, but I think it's a different story. Like, for you, I think that's very, very true. It's like, you know, the way that you think about things and stuff like that. This is somebody that, you know, it's like really, 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 like being undefeated was really, really important to him. You know,
it's special.
It's just a different, he's a different, you know, kind
of. Floyd's undefeated too, but he's not the greatest boxer of all times, right?
It's arguable he is. It's arguable he is.
I don't think so.
Listen, man. I feel like he is. He's my favorite.
He's been hit hard maybe four times his whole fucking career.
Right.
You stop and think about how many fights he fought against elite guys. Not just great defense, like the best defense of all time.
Yeah.
You're talking about a guy who's fought everybody. He fought everybody. He fought Canelo. He fought Pacquiao. Maybe he didn't fight Pacquiao when he was in his prime. And maybe he fought Canelo when he was young and it made him cut extra weight. He did some smart shit. But at the end of the day.
That's part of being a fighter, though, right?
Yeah. At the end of the day. The fucking guy's 49 and Conor McGregor.
Right.
That's what he is. That's what I say.
49 and Conor.
Yeah, because it's kind of weird.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. Somebody like Sugar Ray Robinson. You know, Sugar Ray Robinson.
Different.
Yeah, you know, that's, you know, different time. What
he's,
he
he's lost it, right?
Yeah, he lost. He lost 15.
I think Sugar Ray Robinson had somewhere in the neighborhood of 90 plus victories before his first defeat, though. What is, like, how many? Let's find
his
out.
First,
something
his
crazy.
First defeat was the. Wasn't it to Jack LaMotta?
Jake LaMotta.
Maybe. How old was he? Was he out of his prime?
No.
That might have been his first defeat. No.
He got knocked out.
Yeah.
No, by dude. LaMotta? I thought he got knocked out by Billy Kahn.
No, Jack LaMotta knocked him out.
Jake LaMotta. I don't think
me
he
and names
him
is
out.
Terrible. So it's like,
I think he beat him in a decision in the first fight, and then Robinson beat the shit out of him in the second fight.
No.
Really?
Sugar Ray Robinson. They fought six times, and Robinson
Jake
won.
Ever knocked him out.
Robinson fought him, beat him at the first time, and I think in the rematch is when LaMotta
knocked him out.
Knocked him out.
I don't remember that.
And then in the sixth fight, he TKO'd. Jake, but it was a standing TKO, and he never, you know, he never got knocked off of his feet.
Right.
And that, you know, and he was, you know, talking shit to, well, you stopped me, but you didn't never put me down. Never put me down.
Yeah, that was the St. Valentine's Day massacre, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, when he went through the ropes and he's like leaning, just getting,
yeah, just getting
pounded
on
the ropes. Yeah, that guy had a ridiculous chin.
Crazy.
Eating shots like that from Sugar Ray Robinson?
Yeah.
Wasn't that at middleweight, too, and Robinson really started off at 147?
Yeah, I think it was lighter. I think he started even lighter. It was 40.
See if you can pull
44?
Up his record. Sugar Ray Robinson.
Sugar Ray Robinson.
Boxing record.
His record's like 200 and, yeah, almost 200 fights. Crazy.
That's crazy.
You know?
Why can't we get that many fights?
250, something like that?
How come we can't get that many fights in MMA?
Oh, it's more than that.
Well, in boxing, his 200th fight was, well, look at that, 173-19-6 against Joey Archer. Wow. That's his 200th fight. Go back to his first loss, or go back to the Jake LaMotta fights. You got to go way back. Stop. Those are all win. Jake LaMotta, so he beat him at 36-0, and then he lost. Unanimous decision. Yeah, I was right.
40,
and then he beat him again, unanimous decision. So he lost the unanimous decision to Jake LaMotta. And then he beat everybody else up into a draw with Jose Basora.
So he made it to 40, you know?
Yeah, I thought it was a lot more than that. So his 41st fight, he lost. That was his first loss. And it was a decision to Jake LaMotta.
I guess Floyd really is a GOAT.
I think he's the GOAT. You know, like, it's a different era. Here's the thing. It's like, you know, when you look at Mike Tyson when he was in it, we just had this conversation yesterday on the podcast, but I think Mike Tyson in his prime, when he knocked out Larry Holmes, when he starched Marvis Frazier, like when he was just smashing everybody, I think he had reached this level that you can only maintain for a certain amount of years. Yeah. You know, whether like I think the same thing you could say for Fedor when he was right. in his prime, when he was running things in Pride.
Yeah.
There's a level that you could reach that you can only maintain for a certain amount of years. And it's real hard because I think, this is what I said yesterday, I think if Muhammad Ali had been in the same era as Mike Tyson, he would have been better because Mike Tyson was around. You get better dependent upon who's around you. And when you are in an era, you're kind of defined by your competition. Ali was defined by Joe Frazier and defined by George Foreman and all the guys Larry that he Holmes. Fought, Ken Norton, all those guys that he fought in his era. But it's a different era with Tyson. It's a different era.
But you're
now.
Also forgetting that he beat, you know, Floyd Patterson. You know, it's like before. Yeah. You know, like all the fights that he had before he, you know, came sure. back. You know, but those just weren't competitive.
Right.
You know, he was so fast. He hit so hard. You know, beating Sonny Liston. You know, Sonny Liston's. You know,
he was big. A murderer back then.
Yeah, he's freaking
killer. You
know, yeah, it's like
he destroyed Floyd Patterson
twice.
Yeah,
twice in destroyed. The first round. Right.
He was. You couldn't get hit by him. You just right. couldn't get hit by him.
Yeah,
he had giant fucking hands.
You know, a guy that was close to the mafia. You know, mm-hmm. it's like, and yep. So he beat all those guys. You know, it's like, and
yep.
You know, it's like, so maybe if he doesn't have that 3 years off, you know, maybe who knows?
But who
he
knows?
Did. But yeah. he did.
And it's also he was a different cultural figure, right? Because when you look at like his impact on society and civilization, he stood for something.
Right.
He was a guy who was like, I'm not going to fight in this fucking war. It doesn't make any sense. They took his title away from him, and the people loved him.
Yeah.
It's a different, well, it was different scene.
Well, you had about 50% of the population hated him,
right.
and then 50% of the population loved him and thought he was the greatest thing ever.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, I ain't going over there to fight any Viet Cong. They didn't do anything to me.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, he's a very, very interesting, you know, figure. And then you got somebody like, you know, Joe Frazier, very, very good fighter, you know, won the Olympic gold medal, was an alternate going into the Olympics, and the alternate, you know, I forget what happened over there, you know, he ended up not fighting, Joe fought, he won the Olympic gold medal, they actually rematched as pros, and then Joe stopped him, fourth or fifth round.
Wow.
You know, he was a beast, you know, and then George Foreman, you know, it's like, that's a guy that didn't ever put on a pair of gloves till he was, I think, 19 years old, right?
That's crazy.
You know, it's like 19 years old. Think about that. There's just not that many guys that have, you know, it's never put on a pair of gloves till they're 19 years old and then get to that level.
Well, that's the Deontay Wilder story too, you know.
Is it?
Yeah. Deontay Wilder boxed for a year and a half before he won a bronze medal in the Olympics.
Okay. George Foreman won the gold medal. In the 70s, you know, when it was even, I think, harder, you know, to win the gold medal because of the Cubans and the Russians, you know, it's like they never went pro and stuff like that. You had that.
Right. To Phil Stevenson.
Right. And so it's like, I think it was the 76 Olympics that he won the gold medal. And he was like 24 fights as an amateur. That's all the fights he had. Never lost.
That's nuts.
And it's like, you know, and just crazy.
He fought just 20 times as an amateur before traveling to Mexico City for the 1968 Olympic Games. Amazing.
You know, and never lost. And then, so, that, like, think about that. You know, this guy's walking through guys like Joe Frazier, and then he fights older Muhammad Ali, and then gets, you know, knocked out in the eighth. You know, it's like crazy. You know, he believed that he was invincible. You know, arguably the hardest hitter ever.
Yeah,
you know, it's like, you know, what would have happened to Mike Tyson? We might not have known who Mike Tyson was if he would have been around in those days. You know,
who
it's like,
knows?
Yeah,
or
exactly.
Mike Tyson would have smashed him.
Yeah, you know? You just don't know.
He was faster than everybody. The thing about Mike Tyson as a knockout fighter, if you watch like the Marvis Frazier fight, or
I don't think he was faster than Muhammad Ali though.
I don't think he was faster.
Muhammad's feet were so fast.
I don't think he was
gotta,
faster than
you,
Ali.
You
got to
think
prime.
Back to, you know, when he fought Sonny Liston, when he fought Floyd Patterson.
Right.
You got to think
different.
Of how his feet were
right.
then.
But the 3 years afterwards, I think he was faster than when he fought, like, when he came back.
You think that Mike Tyson was faster than that version of him? Yeah,
yeah,
I agree with that.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But Ali was a different animal. Like, no one had been around before him that was a heavyweight that moved like that. They didn't exist.
Well, Andy
like
had probably the best chin ever.
Oh, an amazing chin.
He wasn't
chin
that heavy for a heavyweight, though, right?
No.
No, he fought. No. The Olympic gold medal he won was cruiserweight.
Was it?
Yeah, he didn't fight at heavyweight. He moved up to heavyweight for when he turned pro.
Who was the English guy that knocked him down and they cut his
gloves?
Was it George?
Yeah, it was George.
The
George,
English guy?
George.
Trying to remember. He was a British gentleman who had a really good left hook, and he caught him with a left hook and dropped him and had him in all kinds of trouble. And
then there was a tear in his glove. George starts with an H, if I remember right.
They tore his glove. Why did they tear his glove?
He had a small little rip, and his corner, what's his trainer's name? Tore the glove a little bit, and they tried to find a pair of gloves, and it halted the action of the fight for about 5 minutes, and it gave Muhammad Ali time to clear his head, and then they resumed the fight. They never found another pair of gloves to put on him in the middle of the rounds. Think about this. This is like...
Wasn't it Henry something?
Yeah, Henry. That's
good cornering.
Henry Cooper. There it is.
That's good cornering.
Yeah, good cornering.
And it's like, and then he went out there, and he stopped him
Angelo
on cuts.
Dundee.
Yeah. He stopped him on cuts, and I don't remember if it was the next round or the following round.
Yeah.
But he cut really, really easy. They said they had his skin; he'd just get bumped.
See if you can find that fight when Henry Cooper drops him, because it's crazy.
He
looks dead. His ass hits, and he pops back up. When Joe Frazier dropped him, it's like his ass hit, and he pops right back up. Yeah. It's crazy. He looks dead.
His chin was incredible.
It's amazing.
But no one's got a crazier pop back up story than Tyson Fury versus Deontay Wilder.
That was crazy.
That looked like it was over for sure. Oh, I remember I was watching it in TV. I was watching in bed. I had my feet up, and in the 12th round, I jumped up. Oh! Like, I thought it was over. I'm like, he knocked him out in the 12th. And when Deontay's going like this, and you see Tyson laying on his back, 7, 8, and then he just gets up. I'm like no way.
And then outboxes him the rest of the fight.
Then outboxes him and wins the rest of the round. Like,
okay.
Crazy.
Remember when
see if you can find Randleman, that Henry Cooper KO.
Randleman suplexed
Fedor. Yeah, and then
it's
Fedor
like,
got him
in a Kimura. Literally, it was like nothing happened. Yeah. It was like, and he rolls him over and Kimuras him. It's like, what the hell? The Terminator freaking almost died.
When he was in his prime, he was something really special, man.
He was so fast.
Remember when he fought Crow Cop and majority of the fight was a kickboxing match. And he was backing up Crow Cop, which
backing
is crazy.
Backing him up because he was faster. He was faster than Crow Cop.
And that was when Crow Cop was just at his peak.
Yeah,
a fucking assassin.
Left leg hospital, right leg death.
Right leg hospital, left leg cemetery.
Cemetery. Yeah.
Remember when he knocked out Vanderlei?
Oh, my God.
Just dropped him.
That head kick, that hurt me watching that. That was so painful. It's like...
There's a video of him when he fought Heath Herring, and there's a still from that video where you see his shin. He dropped Heath Herring with a left kick to the liver.
Yeah.
And you see his shin like halfway into Heath's body.
It looked like it broke his ribs.
Just like sunken deep into his body.
Yeah, he's a big kicker.
Oh my God.
Yeah, Heath fought Brock Lesnar when he first came in, didn't he?
No, Alistair did.
Alistair
fought Brock Lesnar.
Okay.
Remember?
No.
Herring did. Heath Herring did.
Yeah,
is that what you're saying?
Yeah, yes. Heath Herring fought
Heath
Brock.
Herring did, yeah. Yeah, Heath Herring did, and he beat Heath Herring, and then Frank Mir tapped him.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep, got him in that
I thought
toehold.
You were talking about Crow
yeah,
Drop.
Yeah. No. Yeah. That was Gabriel Gonzalez.
Oh, see, back it up. We can see the punt.
Boom.
Bro, he was in trouble. Back that up again. But just do it from the beginning. Do it from. It's okay, right here.
Wow.
Woo.
That's the same left hook that.
Stylebender?
Yeah.
Stylebender got clocked with.
Exactly.
God, let me find out. The left hook is just the kryptonite of the greats.
Well, left hook is the left hook, man. No matter what, who the fuck you are,
I'm about to go.
Somebody
home,
lands one like hook. That.
I'm about to go. Home.
So you said you have this background in kung fu, but do you have someone that you work with that puts together your striking combinations and trains you in all your all the various disciplines of striking, or do you piece it together yourself?
No, I just we just have fun.
You just have fun.
Just have fun.
He's got Suge that he's working with. It's like Suge's holding mitts, and they're going through all that. He goes down there and works with Bob down in Houston.
Mm-hmm.
Bob holds mitts, and then he spars.
So you don't have, like, a lead striking coach that, like, puts everything together?
No. We tried. The guy just wouldn't stop drinking and doing his own fucking thing. So,
oh,
you know, just didn't work out. Could have been great.
Texas got a lot of fucking talent. It's really interesting. So, I mean, you got Charles Oliveira, who's out of Texas. Obviously,
he's tough, man.
Yeah, fuck, he's good.
Yeah, he's tough.
Watching him do that to Tony, I'm like, I can't even believe what I'm seeing.
Yeah,
just dominated every second of that fight. It was bananas.
Tony's that's a different human.
Yeah,
he's like, Tony's tough.
Tough.
Mentally tough. I think, you know, he's like, as far as talent, you know, it's like, I think his toughness is way above his talent's pay grade. You know,
well,
like,
he, first of all, never gets tired, which is bananas.
He's great.
He gets in wars and never gets tired.
Right.
He's got an iron chin. When Oliveira got him in that arm bar and he wouldn't tap in the arm bar, and then he tucks it under his arm.
Right.
And leans
back.
Yeah,
it's like, how did that not break?
Oh. It might have.
And then I was talking to him after, and I was like, dude, that shit was crazy. He was like, that amateur ass arm bar. That was amateur hour.
Tony said?
I was like, how is that amateur? You almost broke your...
Tony is so crazy.
I was like, you're right, Tony.
He just refuses.
He's tough.
Yeah.
Mentally, super tough.
Eddie Bravo trained with him. He went to when they were out at Big Bear. He said they were running hills, and Tony would literally lap his training partners. Like, lap them. Uphills. So he'd run to the top of the hill, come back down, and pass them because they were on their way up the first time.
Golly.
Just crazy work ethic.
Yeah.
He said, I've never seen anything like it. He goes, the guy's trained 6 hours a day. Hard.
Yeah.
Just can keep going.
Mentally tough.
That's wild.
Yeah. That would have been an interesting fight to see him versus Khabib, but the way Oliveira controlled him on the ground.
Yeah, I don't think it would have been interesting. Yeah, after watching that.
We wanted to know, you know, like, what would happen, because Tony's dangerous off of his back. You know, like, submitted Kevin Lee.
Right, no, he's got good jiu-jitsu. You know,
nasty elbows.
He's tough. He's very, very, very tough.
I think I'm more interested in seeing Oliveira fight for the title than anybody in that division.
Yeah, he's got
How do you think shot. Oliveira versus Khabib would have went?
I don't know.
Same thing that would have happened to everybody else.
You think so?
I think so. You know, it's like, Khabib's just too good. Yeah, I think... You know, Khabib's the go-to that division, you know, for me. Yeah.
I believe so. I believe he's the go-to that division, but I don't know what would happen with Oliveira until you see it. See, with Oliveira, like, there are moments, like when Cub Swanson knocked him out, there's moments when you go back in his career and you go, oh, well, this guy's not the greatest. And then you see him in some fights, like the Kevin Lee fight. We submitted Kevin Lee,
right.
Put him out, and then Kevin wakes up and thinks he's still fighting.
Right.
Submits Tony in a spectacular way, and just he's so technical.
Yeah.
Like, everything's so good. He's never out of position. Everything's so, he doesn't force anything. Everything looks fucking amazing.
His jiu-jitsu looks really good.
Oh, amazing. Yeah. It's amazing. And you go, man, I want to see him fight for the title. I want to see him fight Dustin. I want to see him fight Connor. I want to see him fight whoever else is in that division.
I don't think Connor's going to be a contender anymore, though.
I think that's it.
You know, it's like, you know, I'm sure he'll make money, and, you know, he'll probably fight a few more times if he wants to, but it's like, I think time has probably taken its toll.
Do you think that's it, or do you think it's just money and motivation and spending a lot of time out of the sport? I mean, look, he's training for Floyd, so he's boxing for a long time.
Right.
Then he takes 2 years off. He's fighting Khabib.
Right.
You know, and then he beats Cowboy, but just swarmed him, you know, swarmed him, jumped on him real quick, hurt him quick, and stopped him.
Cowboy was always a slow starter.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I think it's just, you know, maybe it's time, maybe it's desire, maybe, I don't know, I don't have the answer, but I think the time has come and went.
It's easy to say that after you see the result, right?
Yeah.
But what's interesting in that fight is there's moments in that fight where he was having big success, and he hurt Dustin at one point in time with a big left hand.
Yeah.
But that fucking low calf kick.
Yeah.
That low calf kick is a beast.
Yeah.
That's a...
It changed the look on his face.
Yeah.
I think me personally, I'm a Conor fan, so probably I go a little biased on it, but I think it's more so that time, you know, that time going to boxing and then coming over, first fight back fighting Khabib, and then you take time off and then you come back and then you fight Cowboy, and then you... pandemic comes, you get a whole nother year off, and then you come back and you fight Dustin Poirier. Let's think about his last few fights. Let's think about his last three losses. You got Floyd Mayweather, right? Arguably one of the greatest boxers of all time. If not, definitely the best defensive boxer of all times, right?
Yeah.
And one of the smartest boxers of all times as far as how he did his career. And then you lose to Khabib.
Yeah.
You say it's the greatest 155er ever. Even won a round against Khabib. Probably drunk off his whiskey as well, you know? Then you got the Dustin Poirier fight. I think he's pretty serious about the Dustin Poirier fight, but I think at the same time, I think he's thinking bigger than what he was at the time. I think he's thinking about boxing Pacquiao and doing all these other things that he goes in there with, my hands are this fantastic and it's time to show you guys that Max Holloway's not the best boxer. He gets chopped at the leg. Now it's hard to move. Yeah, it's hard to move. You can't. It's hard to defend a takedown. It's hard to grapple. It's hard to box. It's hard to do anything. You know, me personally, I never thought an Irish man could get knocked out until then. You know, so it's a fucking crazy night. You know, but yeah, I don't necessarily think it's over for the guy. I just think the guy has to not take a rich person's approach. I think he has to take more of an approach that he took back in the day when he was on welfare.
Right.
Go out there and get it. Stop telling everybody what your training schedule is going to be, and just fucking do what the fucking gym tells you to do.
Well, he was pretty fucking rich when he fought Eddie Alvarez. You know, he was already a multimillionaire. It's not. I don't necessarily think it's a rich thing. I don't know if that affects him that much, but I do think it's inactivity, and I do think that Dustin got a lot better. Dustin's at 145, Dustin was depleted and diminished. At 155, he's fucking huge. He doesn't even look like a 55er. He looks like a 70.
Yeah,
his back is fucking gigantic. Yeah. And Dustin, look at Dustin's series of victories. Look at the people that he beat. Beat the shit out of Max Holloway, right? That's crazy.
But that was at 155, not 45.
Right, but still, you're still Max Holloway.
Yeah, he beat him. He beat him.
And beat him with what Max Holloway is best at, which is stand-up. I mean, you see what Max Holloway did to Calvin Kattar. Like, Jesus Christ, Max Holloway's stand-up is outstanding. So he beats him.
For whatever reason, he looked a little bit slow in that fight.
Max did.
I thought Max looked a little bit off when he fought Dustin.
Might be gaining the weight.
It's like he was a little bit slower. It's like, you know, that last fight, he looked so fast. And some of the other fights, like,
but it's when also,
he fought Aldo. And
he's fighting Dustin.
Styles make fights.
Dustin's fucking good, man.
Oh, Dustin's very, very good.
He's fucking good. And
but
then,
he's not Khabib. He's not, you know, he's not, you know, he is good. But it's like, he's,
you think it was other victories. Dustin wins the rematch? You think hands down, Dustin again?
No, I would never say hands down. You never know, because Connor did have moments in that fight.
Yeah,
he had moments in the first round. And Dustin said there was a moment in that first round where he got his bell rung and he was in trouble. Now, imagine if Connor connects again.
Right.
Imagine. I mean, that's how fights are. Fights
Loose
are
Connor.
Weird. Weird things happen.
Loose Connor. Connor who plays touch butt in the park is a great Connor. You know, he's moving and he's fucking throwing those spinning heel kicks and shit.
The thing is, though, he's heavy on that front leg. Wide karate stance. He's always doing this. Man, when that leg is available for that low calf kick, that changes everything. Changes your whole approach. And Connor is also a guy that's never been known to, like, switch back and forth. He doesn't like to have left leg forward. That's not a common thing for him.
No.
So once his leg's getting chewed up, you know, it's not like he's got that option. Like, he can fight just as good from orthodox.
No, and it's probably worse from orthodox now that all he does is work on his boxing.
Right.
You know, it's like... That he probably used to do from a switch stance, you know, different kicks, different setups, it's probably not there anymore, you know.
Yeah.
He's probably really, really great fighter from that one stance. But now, when you take him outside of that stance, he probably becomes, you know, almost like a C or D grade fighter.
Well, they're talking about doing that fight again, which a lot of people in that division are pissed. Because they're like, well, what the you guys are tying up
do it.
The championship.
Do it.
Because it's not really the championship.
They don't want the
belt. Championship has not even been decided whether or not Khabib's going to step down.
Yeah.
So then there's been talk, well, they might do it again, but they'll do it for the belt.
I think Charles and Chandler for even an interim belt, just some type of belt, Charles and Chandler makes sense. People probably can get mad about that because the Chandler's barely coming from Bellator over to UFC, but come on, dude. He just knocked out Dan Hooker.
Yeah.
He didn't take him down and
smashed him,
which we all thought he was going to do. He knocked him out.
One punch.
With that left hook that we talk about, right?
Yep. Yeah. Beautiful. You know? Long one, too. Long left hook.
Yeah. So,
touched him to the body with the right hand, then left hooked him.
The Bronx guy, you know, Charles, you know, he's been doing great. He deserves to fight for a belt. So him and, you know, Mr. Bellator fighting for a belt, I think it sounds good. And
it
I think
a lot of people even Dustin fighting for the belt.
But does that make
Poirier's
sense?
He's trying to make money right now. He's not worried about the belt.
Andy
Let him
lost.
Make his money.
He lost to Khabib, so it's like, you know.
He lost to Khabib, you know. He almost submitted Khabib, you know. He had Khabib in a really tight guillotine.
Yeah,
he
did. Guillotine.
You know, I mean,
he took him in a deep water for sure.
I mean, I'm pretty sure Khabib probably farted two times in that guillotine. You know what I mean? And it's like when you get choked real hard, it's like, you know what I mean? And then you pass over and you're good to go. You know.
Do you like what do you do with Justin Gaethje? Because Justin Gaethje
just got subbed. His performance, I like Justin Gaethje, but his performance against Khabib was fucking embarrassing.
You know? I don't know if it was embarrassing.
I think it was embarrassing. Yeah, like, he ran the whole time. If I run like that against Derek Brunson, that's a problem. Don't run from somebody just because they're good.
But he's got to keep a way to land those leg kicks. Yeah, he was hurting him. He
definitely hurt him.
Fucking jab. What's wrong with a jab? Mm. Nobody throws jab.
Okay, I want you to remember that. Yeah, I want you to remember that.
Okay.
You just said that.
Thank you.
Throw the damn hook.
Throw
the jab.
Shit. I set myself up. But yeah, I from everything I seen from Justin Gaethje and then that fight, I was like, oh, fuck that, dude.
You didn't like it?
I lost money on that shit. Hell yeah.
What do you think about Gaethje versus Chandler?
That's a good fight.
That'd be a good fight.
Yeah. That's a good fight.
Yeah. That's a good fight. This is my thing. Gaethje just has to go get a win. Gaethje go gets a win, then, right. You know.
Yeah, then he can fight for the title.
Yeah.
He
gets a win, he fights for the title. You know, it's like.
He looks good.
Well, if he beats Chandler, that's a big win for him, right?
Yeah. Chandler.
He can't fight Dustin Poirier right now, though. If Poirier was fighting for the belt right now, you would say that Justin Gaethje deserved to fight Dustin Poirier for the belt. Poirier's already knocked that man out.
No, I would say if anyone's going to fight for the belt, it should be Dustin Poirier versus Charles Oliveira. Yeah. That's what I think is for the belt.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Yeah. If Khabib says, I am done 100%, I'm going to relinquish my belt.
I think that he said that a couple times.
Yeah, but Dana won't let him. Dana keeps waiting. Dana keeps holding on.
I'm done. No, you're not done.
If you're Conor, you have to be so butthurt right now. You know, like the guy that you just truly don't like. You know what I mean? Think about it. Dana's letting him keep his belt and do everything that he wants to do. You went up and got the second belt, weren't inactive or anything like that, and he made you give your shit up. You're sitting there just fucking pissed right now. And you can never even rematch him again. You just got knocked out. Khabib's never going to rematch
you. Khabib is at the peak of his superpowers right now. The peak of his superstar status. Yeah. The peak, I mean, worldwide notoriety. He's at the peak.
Yeah.
You know, the way he smashes Conor and the way he taps out Gaethje to go from there to just saying that's
and
it.
And Poirier.
Yes, and Poirier. Three in a row. So, and that's three amazing guys in a row. So, for him to be in this situation where he's like, I'm gone. That's it. So many people are like, man, but you are, like, that's where the money is. Like, you're right there. Like, you could be making tens of millions of dollars per fight for so many fights. And he's still in his prime as an athlete.
Yeah.
You know, he's...
Yeah.
How old is he now? 32?
I believe he's 32. Maybe 33 at the most.
I would like to see the double champ status. At 55, I don't feel like there's anything else to prove. You know what I mean? It's like he's ran through everybody at 55. I feel what Demetrius Johnson was saying about rematches, but that's a greater risk than the reward. You know, it's like I feel like, you know, Usman's looking fantastic. Never lost in the UFC, right? Only one loss on his record. He's looking great.
Yep.
You know, you go out there and you maul Usman. You know, it's like now there's no question. You don't ask if Jon Jones is better than Khabib. You know what I mean?
How much taller is
Usman's a big fella.
Yeah, how much bigger is he?
He's got muscles that I didn't even know people had.
Doesn't matter.
You see, like when I was interviewing him and I'm looking at him on the monitor, I'm like,
I don't like Usman.
He's so shredded.
I don't like that guy.
How do you not like Usman?
He went to school in Arlington, right? Arlington, Texas?
I believe so.
Right? How often do you hear him claiming it? Like, you know, how often do you hear...
Claims Dallas.
That's not Arlington.
Oh.
You know, it's like the Dallas Cowboys, they fucking play in Arlington.
So you don't like the fact that he doesn't claim Arlington?
Yeah, I'm just a different guy from a different place, you know, and where I'm from, you don't claim where you're from, you don't get respect from me. You know? I just don't, you know, it's like he's a good fighter, you know, it's like... But,
good.
You know, yeah, it's good.
Just
know?
Good?
Just good. None of these guys are great. These
you don't
guys
think
all
Usman's
say
great?
They all think they're great. You know, and there's like a top of the mountain, right? I was talking to Style Bender about this shit.
Okay.
There's a top of the mountain. Everybody thinks that they're at the top of the fucking mountain. There's no such thing as the top of the mountain. If you think that you're at the top of the mountain, that means your mountain's stopping at a certain spot and somebody else's mountain's going to get higher than that. There's no such thing as the top of the mountain. You know, Usman's a very good fighter. Great fighter? No. He couldn't go out there and win a boxing match. He couldn't go out there and out-wrestle the best wrestler. He couldn't go out there and do the best against the best of everybody. You're not the greatest.
He was the NCAA Division II champ, right?
Yes.
Yes. So he won a championship.
Right now?
Well, I don't know about that.
No, now he's the UFC
undisputed
welterweight champion of the world.
No, Olympic gold medalist?
Well, that's Henry.
No.
That's Henry. You know,
no, he decided. I mean, he decided
DC too,
to fight in MMA.
No, DC never won.
No?
No.
He decided to fight in MMA instead of pursuing wrestling.
My personal belief. This is just my belief. It's okay for me to be wrong here. This is just my personal belief. You know, it's like nobody's great. Nobody's great.
Nobody's great.
Nobody's fucking great. When you retire, you can say you had a great career, but nobody's great. No such thing.
No such thing as greatness.
No such thing as greatness.
What about Mighty Mouse when he's at the peak of his powers?
Fucking fantastic.
As good as it gets, technically.
Yeah, he's so good.
As good as it gets, technically.
Yeah, he might be, like, in terms of, like, the ability as a mixed martial arts fighter, he might be the best ever. Because he would...
What weight is he?
He's tiny.
125, right?
Yeah, 125.
Yeah, it's like, what weight does Gervonta Davis fight at?
35? Yeah. Gervonta's 35, because that's too...
Who's 25? Name a 25 boxer. A boxer close to 25. I want Demetrius to go out there and outbox that guy.
Well, Mighty Mouse, you know, it's like, I mean, the thing with Mighty is I think he's really, really technically really, really good. I don't believe that he's near as athletic as, like, Henry.
No.
You know, it's like, you know, he doesn't have the, you know, he's just not as natural of an athlete. And that's not a knock against him. It's like, we're all given, you know, it's like whatever we have or God-given talents, whatever you want to say. You know, I don't believe that he was that physically gifted of an athlete. I think he's very, very, very gifted. You know, he definitely is above, way above average, but he's not in the same realm of, you know, it's like you.
Yeah, and then you know,
like,
and that's
Kevin, it's like this that's is a another different
reason.
Time.
That's another reason why they can't be great. Yeah. You can't be great. Nobody has it all.
John Jones, great,
fucking good, not great.
What?
Steroid allegations? Oh, fucking. He has a loss on his record for not doing the right move. You know, it's like at the end of the day,
does he though? It's like that's a lot of horse shit.
It's still there.
Yeah,
it's still there. I mean,
they tried to get that taken.
There's a couple decisions that I felt like I didn't lose, but it's still there. Yeah, you know, it's like a loss is a loss. You know, a fuck up is a fuck up. You know, it's like
John Jones. You know, it's like he's probably the most physically gifted athlete. You know,
and probably the smartest.
It's either you or him. You know, it's like I've never trained with him. You know, it's like I really think that he's probably the
I bet you Khabib's a fucking a different type of athlete too.
Yeah,
the way that he can move DC around when they're wrestling, he has to.
It's crazy.
It's like 155 pounder wrestling with a heavyweight.
Well,
like,
everybody in the gym says that. Whether it's training with Luke Rockhold, when Rockhold's a light heavyweight, he's throwing him around.
Yeah,
it's like just, he's just a freak.
Yeah,
it's freak.
Yeah,
but okay. But you know, it's like as far as like you know, like John Jones isn't crazy fast. You know, it's like, you know, that's his biggest hole is he's like, you know, it's like he's not as fast as some of the other guys and stuff like that.
But he knows how to win.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, definitely
knows how to win. Knows how to win.
Well, and I really believe that he's, you know, very, very physically gifted. You know,
what do you think about him at heavyweight?
It'll be interesting, right? You know, it's like, we'll just have to wait and see. It's like, you know, he's going the big route, you know, getting big, getting strong.
Yeah.
You know, starting to look like his brothers. You know, it's like, it'll be interesting to watch and see.
Interesting to see how that affects his cardio, too. Like, how is that going to... You're carrying around legitimately an extra 30 or 40 pounds of body weight.
But he's got the frame to carry it.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Like, I mean, it's like, you know, look at his brothers.
I mean, they're all huge.
Freaking monsters.
He's doing a lot of lifting, though, but what's those legs look like, John?
It's the calves.
What's those legs look like?
The calves are crazy. But he can do deadlifts. Like, he's deadlifting a lot of weight. Right. He's obviously got strong legs.
Yeah.
But it's crazy how small his calves are. It doesn't even make sense.
It's genetics. You know, it's like either you have them or you don't.
I know.
He just doesn't have them.
But it's weird. You know?
Yeah.
It's, but when you think about distributing mass over a 205-pound body when he was a light heavyweight champion, it actually was a great frame.
His legs are looking a little bigger.
Yeah, they're definitely looking bigger.
Oh, yeah. He looks way, it's like, there's that other scene where I saw him with his shirt off where it's like, God damn, he's big.
Yeah, he's big. Yeah.
He's
getting big. I mean, he's a legit 245 now, probably.
Wow.
You know?
That's a heavyweight.
250. He's a heavyweight. He's a legit heavyweight. I mean, Cain Velasquez, when he was at his peak, was 230. Around. Yeah.
Yeah. You know?
Cain was smaller than that.
Yeah. That was crazy how
Cain's, I think he could have did that back in the day.
Cliff that he fell off of was so steep.
Well, that was the injuries, man. I think his mind was so strong that his body just couldn't just keep up with his brain.
Just injuries.
And everything started going south. His knees, his shoulders, his back, his neck, everything. Just slowly but surely it all started falling apart.
He's a beast, though.
Dude, when he was in his prime in the UFC, I maintain I've never seen a heavyweight like that guy.
The cardio that he had.
It was insane. Didn't make any sense.
Didn't look natural.
Cardio look like natural. A 135-pound guy.
It's crazy.
It was huge.
Shoot. Push.
Yeah, he'd put a pace on guys, and you just see this look on their eyes. Like, it's similar to sometimes when guys fight Khabib. They have this look like they can't believe what's happening to them. Yeah. Like they had this idea what the fight was going to be like when they were preparing for it, and then here they are. And like it's just they can't keep up. They know they can't keep up. It's not possible.
But okay, like with Gaethje, you know, it's like when those leg kicks hurt him, you know, it's like, and then all of a sudden there was another gear that he that he hit with that that last leg kick, and boom, oh fuck, I'm not gonna take any more of those. I'm gonna just put you on your head.
Yeah,
I'm gonna take down this guy, and you know,
yeah, make amazing, work. Yeah. Like the sport is so it's so interesting seeing where the sport is now as opposed to where it was 10 years ago, 20 years ago. There's not a sport like it.
It's always evolving.
Always.
What do you think these kids are going to be like in 10 years?
I know, right?
It's going to be fucking crazy.
I mean, I was watching
We might be able to start talking about great then.
Pull up this video from Mick Maynard's account. Mick Maynard has a video on his account of a little girl. This girl looks like she's about 3 years old.
The one boxing?
Yes, and kicking and kicking and throwing kicks. And, I mean, it's just insane. She's so good at, like, 3 years old, throwing perfect kicks, perfect punches, lightning fast. I mean, maybe she's four. I don't know. But she's tiny.
I don't know.
Look at this.
But
look at this. Look at this kid right here.
To watch this.
Give me some volume on this, because this is crazy.
I did see this.
Look at this. Come on, son. I mean, what the fuck? How old is that kid? That's a tiny little kid, man.
It's crazy how this coach has a system together. He has a little ball right there for her to kick and everything.
Imagine your kid fights this kid and you're thinking, oh, you know, how much do they know? They're four. This kid sending four-year-olds to the fucking hospital. And there's something about being Russian that scares me extra. just the language.
That was crazy.
They're hard people, man. And you see that? Four-year-old. That's a crazy technique, though, right?
Poor Cam.
So when Kevin fought in China, you know, it's like we went over to China. We went to the Great Wall. Kevin didn't go that day, but me and the rest of the corner guys, we headed up to the Great Wall. Shug didn't go, but there was another guy with us, and he went with us. So there was three of us: Paul, Justin, and myself. And we go up to the Great Wall. We go up the, you know, we walk around on it. We do that. And then they got a little place that you can have a drink. You know, it's like it's not a bar or anything like that. You can just buy souvenirs, but you can also buy alcohol. And we were just having a Coke, and I think I was having a Coke, and the other guys were having maybe a beer, and this guy comes over. We're going to take a picture by the Great Wall, and this Russian asks to take the picture, and it's like, you know, I'll take the picture for you. And he doesn't speak hardly any English, stuff like that, but he's with a group, and so he takes our picture, and we sit back down, and I was like, you know what, that guy wanted to talk. So I get up and I go start talking to the group of them, and sure enough he did. You know, his son had trained MMA, he saw our ears, he saw what we were wearing, and it's like, and so we end up talking to him, and it's like, and so the pretty soon, you know, they bust out the vodka, and it's like, so we're getting drunk at the Great Wall of China with Russians, and it's like, and it's a big group of them, and it's like, and, you know, so we have a few shots, and it's like, you know, it's like a tradition, I guess, you know, it's like whoever pours the vodka, they pour the whole time. So it's a, and that he went, and it was a guy that took our picture, you know, he's pouring everybody till the alcohol runs out, and then we ride one of those little things down, and it's like, you know, and then we go have more drinks, you know, and they, it's like, they, you know, Russians are just like us, you know, it's like they just want to have a good time and have fun, and you know, it's like they were excited, they were there with some UFC fighters, we were there, you know, excited, we were with some business guys from
Coach
Russia.
Is being modest, they were very happy to be with Russians. He was so stoked.
It was awesome.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, she kicked my son's
ass. Vasi dot, for people listening, V-A-S-I dot Lisa 2014.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
So she must have been born 2014. Fucking talented. Crazy. Crazy how talented. Because, you know, she can't even been training for 6 years.
No.
That's what's funny. No. You know, she's 6 years old. It's like, you only got 6 years. To be that good? Isn't it weird how kids learn shit so quick?
So quick.
Do you feel, like, how old are you now, Kevin?
28.
Do you feel any different in the way you learn things now versus the way you learned things when you were 15?
Yeah.
Yeah? Yeah.
Honestly, yeah. I notice the difference. You know what I mean? I retain things better in a way, but at the same time, I think, I don't feel like I do certain things as fast as I used to. You know, it's like, I don't know if that makes sense.
That's crazy because you're not even in your prime.
No.
You're like 4 years from your prime.
I can still feel the difference between things, though. You know, yeah? It's like, yeah, A, the peanut butter. Hell, you did
it. It's the fucking Pop-Tarts, man. It's not the peanut butter. The nutritionists are pulling their hair out. Like, what is he saying? It's not peanut butter.
So if any nutritionists want to talk to me about this, you know, holler at me. Hit Joe up first, though. Let him know I was right, all right?
Please do. Imagine if it was.
Hey, what's that thing over there, man? That little
clock, I think.
It's a clock. Yeah. It's a clock. A gentleman named, he's got an Instagram, TGT Studios. And I had him, this is the second one. He built this one for the old studio back in LA, and then he built this one for this one.
So how you liking Texas?
I love it. Love it.
That's good.
Love it.
You know, I'm a Californian guy myself. I love it here as well. So.
Well, I love what California used to be.
Yeah.
But I know California is not California anymore. It's not the same place. Like, L.A. is not the fucking same place. First of all, nothing's open. You can't go to the – you can't train. You can't do a comedy show. You can't go to a restaurant. You can't sit inside at a restaurant. There's, like, all the things that I used to love doing, you can't do. It's just – and homelessness is off the charts. Poverty's off the charts. The fucking streets – you drive down Hollywood, things are boarded up, and there's tents everywhere. They fucked that city up to almost beyond repair.
Yeah.
And are you training now?
I haven't been. Haven't been since I got here.
You haven't?
Or I've been lifting weights and hitting the bag and stuff like that, but no jiu-jitsu. No, but I want to.
Why not?
I just have an issue I'm trying to deal with one of my knees. I have a pretty bad meniscus tear that I've been getting stem cell shots into, and it feels pretty good right now.
Yeah.
My goal right now is, so we're here in February. I think by April, I think I'm going to start training again.
You going to go to Onnit?
Yeah, we have a 10th Planet over here at Onnit, and then also my friend Todd White, he has a Machado school.
Nice.
So,
very cool. You're going to go the Machado way?
Well, that's where I have a black belt from John Jocks. So okay. I have to train there.
Yeah.
There you go.
It's my lineage. And Todd's a good friend of mine, too. He's been on the podcast before, too. You know, he's one of John Jocks' black belts, and he's got a great place out in Dripping Springs.
Nice. Hey, what's the name of...
There's a lot of jiu-jitsu out here, though.
The whiskey that... what's the name does? Bruce does.
Yeah, you had it on
Bruce
your
Buffers?
Show. No. Bruce Conti is a friend of ours, and... Fort Worth.
Yeah.
And they got the Texas Silver Star whiskey.
Oh, yeah. We've had that. Yeah. It's great.
Yeah.
I thought you meant Bruce Buffer. Bruce Buffer has his own whiskey.
Does he really?
Yeah, it's called Puncher's Chance.
Puncher's Chance.
That's Tiger awesome. On the label. Yeah, he gave me a bottle of it. I haven't tried it, though.
You haven't tried it?
I love that guy.
Yeah. He's fun, man. He's always so nice.
Nobody gets me jazzed up for a fight like that guy. Yeah. When he's introducing Kevin Holland!
It's like every time.
It's like a fucking cherry, man. He gets so red. I mean, he fucking gives it. He doesn't have anything left in the tank.
No,
he drains the gas when he fucking introduces you, man. It's awesome.
I love the pride lady, though, that screamed.
Oh, yeah.
She was
I didn't
awesome.
Know what the fuck she was saying.
I had no idea.
See,
no
I understand idea. Bruce Buffer. When Bruce Buffer is when, look at him, man. I mean, come on, dude. And plus, who's more stylish? Like, the guy's always got the sharpest suits. Look at that fucking jacket.
That guy is always ready.
When he did the 360, it was awesome, though.
Dude, we talked him into that. There's a whole video. There's a whole video of me explaining how I'm going to talk him into doing a 360.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like, I worked on it for like a year. He would do this. Like, he would interview. He was introducing, fighting out of the blue corner. He'd do this. But he was doing like a 180 called the Buffer 180. I go, have you considered doing a 360? So there's a whole video of us convincing him to do the Buffer 360. This is just the video.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's a video of me talking him into it. And the video, it's like for a year. Was trying to get him to do the 360. So he decided UFC 100, the big one, he was going to do a 360. So as he interviews Brock Lesnar, he does a 360-degree spin. Like he's doing like a 360 roundhouse
he
kick.
He jumped and
boom. Yeah, he jumped and stepped. It's pretty wild, man. You can watch him do it. But in his antics, this is the one where me talking him into it, the Buffer 180 to the Buffer 360. So I'm buttering him up. I'm like, come on, bro, you could do this. This is a long-ass time ago, man. This is 2009. Is that what it was?
Yeah.
So I'm like, man, look, I'm wearing a tap-out shirt. Mm-hmm. See? Yeah. I'm trying to get him to do it. And he eventually did it, man. He eventually did a fucking 360.
He said he wanted to do it again.
No. Nah,
that's funny.
No, well, he fucked up his ACL during one of his introductions. He blew his ACL out. Yeah. No, I'm not bullshitting. He has he only has one ACL right now. Yeah.
I fought my whole career with one ACL.
Really?
Yeah, I blew it out in the Ultimate Submission Showdown. I was in the finals against David Adlon, and he had me in a lockdown, and I was just pushing forward and tore my own ACL.
I lost my ACL in a lockdown, too. I was sideways.
Yeah.
And instead of like being like leg like this, my leg was sideways. My friend Will, he just extended the lockdown. I heard like a carrot.
Yep.
And just, it didn't even hurt. It was just weird. It was like, I didn't know what was going on, and I actually kept rolling, and I thought my knee just popped, and then I was in my office moving some boxes around, and my leg just went.
Did you get it fixed?
Ah, shit. Yeah, I got it fixed.
Yeah, I never
Never got it fixed?
No, never.
To this day?
No, I don't have an ACL.
Oh, my God. Yeah, but isn't it give out on you?
No.
No. It's the only thing that was when I throw my right hand, it would hyperextend.
Boom, yeah?
Like this.
That's it?
Other than that,
which knee? Your right knee?
My right knee.
So wow. Like, so it doesn't bother you at all?
Not really. It's better than my left knee. So it's like
what?
Yeah,
it's better than my left. What's wrong with your left knee?
I don't know. It's like nothing. But
so is this showing him doing it? Oh, that's it right there. Mm-hmm. Oh my God! Look at this.
Oh. Ooh, shit. He's like, oh, what the fuck is this?
Oh. Yeah, he blew his shit out.
Getting old. Yeah,
he kept performing. He stuck it out.
Look at these guys. What is he doing?
He's like, he's doing karaoke. God. This is UFC.
He heard it doing karaoke.
200 week.
That's so much less impressive.
So much less.
I thought he heard it yelling.
No, well, he's performing for a pump up week.
Oh, wow. And he blew his ACL out?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That sucks.
He stuck out the performance.
That does suck. But he never got it fixed. So he can't really do the. He can't jump up and
nah, it kills
swam
your vertical,
and stuff like that anymore.
It kills your vertical.
So you just never bothered to get it fixed?
No, I blew it out, I think, in 2002 or 2003, whatever year
that
was.
That is so crazy.
Yeah.
So it doesn't fuck with your meniscus, though? Because your knee's less...
I had a surgery to clean it out, but I told them, don't fix it.
Why?
Well, because I was fighting. You know, it was like it was right at the end of my fighting career, and it's like, that's a year off, and I just didn't want to take the time. I've already fought all these fights. All my UFC fights were without an ACL, so, you know...
I know Rico Rodriguez did the same thing.
Yeah, yeah. His would come out. His would come out.
Justin doesn't have an ACL either.
Gaethje doesn't?
Gaethje has one leg's fucked up.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember Rico. Rico would have to, you know, like shimmy it.
Uh-huh.
Get it to pop back in.
But my worry would be that you're chewing your meniscus up because of the laxity.
Yeah, I mean, I had, they went in and they trimmed it and, you know, fixed it, did a scope, you know, and it's like, and I haven't had problems with it since then. They said I would, but according to them, I should have had it replaced by now.
And you train jiu-jitsu, but do you do other things as well?
You know,
do you lift in weights or running or anything like that?
I run. Yeah? I run. I lift weights some. You know, I do a lot of body weight stuff now, yeah, but I don't, and I run. I'm a fair weather runner. I don't run. Yeah, when it's cold out, I don't like that. So I'll go outside and run when it's nice out. But it's like, I'll go train jiu-jitsu. I'd rather do that than anything.
Yeah, well, it's fun.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah, I mean,
it's addicting.
I just can't believe that you could compete at such a high level with no ACL, and then you could still train to this day. Scrambles and shit.
No problem.
He scrambles good.
No problems.
It's annoying. Super annoying.
Yeah, but. The neck is a problem. The neck is a problem. The neck's a real problem.
And have you looked into other methods of working with the discs? Like they do stem cell injections into the disc now?
Yeah, I've tried some stuff.
Have you?
I feel like, you know, I don't feel like anything helped. You know, I had stem cells injected into it. I didn't feel like it helped.
How long ago was this?
A few months.
Yeah, it wasn't that long ago.
It wasn't very long ago. I didn't.
Oh, you got to give it a chance.
Yeah, that's the problem. Right, yeah, he gets something done, and then
I waited the whole time that they told me to. I waited the whole time.
30 hours.
Yeah. Just like 3 weeks they told me I had to wait.
Yeah.
And it didn't help. Nothing.
He waited a week, and then he went back to, like, teaching, you know?
Uh-huh.
And he wasn't rolling, but he was, like, really aggressively holding people like this, you know? It's like, it's not jiu-jitsu, but it's jiu-jitsu.
And I agree that it's like, you know, when you show stuff, you know, it's like you do end up using your head, and it's definitely hard on it. It's just hard not to, you know? It's like I can have somebody else teach, but what if they don't do it right? You know, it's like stuff like that.
They never do it right.
Yeah.
They never do it right. And Travis looks, he's like, no,
Yeah, your big toe's in the wrong area. Let me just show you how it can be done. You know, it's like, yeah, it's like, okay, coach, you just want to roll.
Well,
yeah.
I remember Charles McCarthy rolled with you when you guys were on the Ultimate Fighter, and he said, he goes, he compared your jiu-jitsu to Ricardo Laborio.
Yeah,
he was like, nice Jesus Christ. He said his jiu-jitsu is ridiculous.
Yeah. Charles is nice. You know, in that situation, Ricardo Laborio, for the guys that don't know, you know, it's like, this is ADCC champ. You know, he won a bunch of other
stuff. He's an all-time great. Yeah, he's amazing, you know, amazing, really, really legend. Good.
You know, I was there when he won the championship. He barely spoke any English at the time.
That's crazy because he's so fluent now.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's like I met him at the Frankfurt airport. You know, it's like, and you saw the Brazilians, and I walk up, and nobody spoke English at the time. Mario Sperry did, and then he spoke a little bit. And so, and he was happy to practice his English on me, and I ended up talking to him. You know, they gave me like an 8-hour layover in that stupid airport. It was terrible. But, you know, but yeah, he was super nice, nice, nice guy.
Do you miss competing at all?
Yeah, I like, you know, I miss fighting. You know, I miss fighting.
You miss fighting in MMA more than you miss jiu-jitsu competition?
Yeah, I mean, it's like getting old sucks. You know, it's like I wish I could still do the things that I could do physically. You know, it's like, but that's okay. You know, time moves on. You know, it's not my time now. This guy's time, like Kevin's, you know, and this is fun too. So
Do you enjoy coaching, and well, especially when you get a talent like Kevin.
I love teaching jiu-jitsu. I love teaching jiu-jitsu. I love, you know, Kevin's special. You know, it's like, because it is, you know, it's like Kevin's, you know, Kevin's just special. You know, it's like it, compared to coaching a lot of people is difficult, but it's Kevin's a lot of fun. So I'm super happy to have Kevin.
Sometimes.
Do you feel fortunate that you ran into Travis Luter? I mean, you could have walked into any dojo, you know?
Yeah, I'm super lucky, super blessed, you know what I mean? It's like you said, could have walked in anywhere, and it's like, who knows what life would have been, but it's like, my life is what it is today, I think a big part because of where I ended up at, you know, it's like, Travis's gym's done a lot for me, a whole lot for me, you know?
Well, it's just, I mean, when you think about guys in America, particularly, you know, we're talking about, what, 13 years ago when you first started?
Yeah,
you know,
about.
There's, you can't do any better, you know, you just get different.
Yeah.
Different. Yeah, yeah. Different. Different's a good way to describe it.
Yeah. I mean, there's elite high level jiu-jitsu, and there's, you know, there's maybe a dozen of those spots.
Yeah.
At that time, at least. It's more so now. It's kind of spread out now even more.
Yeah, but it's okay, like in Brazil, you know, like Brazil was the Mecca, you know, it's like in the 2000s especially, it's like in the 90s, you know, you're going to have jiu-jitsu is just really, really hot. And then a lot of those guys moved here, you know, and then some of them have created their own, you know, where it's really, really good. Some of them haven't, you know, but like some of these guys, you know, it's like the Atos's, the, you know, it's like there's so, you know, Henzo's gym in New York is really, really good. It's
incredible.
Like, yeah. It's there's so many good places to go train in America now that it's actually arguably probably better than Brazil. You know, it's like because a lot, you know, almost all the good guys came here. There's still really good guys in Brazil, you know, and I'm sure you can find amazing training there. But it's like the you know, American training is really, really good now.
It's pretty damn good. It's, you know, what's crazy to me that Oliveira doesn't speak English.
Isn't that nuts?
He's been here forever. He lives in Houston.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's been here for a long time.
Where does he train out?
It's not a big name gym. It's not like a very famous place. There's two different schools of thought, right? There's one school of thought, join a place like American Top Team. You're around a bunch of assassins. You get better. And then the other school of thought is get individual treatment from a really highly specialized gym that focuses on you and keep getting better and better and better. And then you reach this elite level. Like, I don't know who's right and who's wrong.
You know, I've been to like Tiger Muay Thai in Thailand, you know, and they got really, really good trainers, but there's just so many people, you know, it's like, it would be very hard to figure out even who you are, you know, being there and stuff like that. Being in a smaller gym, you know, there's good things, but, you know, it's just finding one that's, you know, you have good people. And the other thing is figuring out, you know, it's like, you know, like trying to figure out how to coach Kevin is really, really, I'm still trying to figure it out. You know, it's like,
what's he doing wrong, Kevin?
No, it's not that.
It's me.
It's like you have to talk to Kevin in a different way than you talk to other people. It's like, I'm very, very honest. You know, if I feel like you're doing something wrong, I'll tell you, you know, it's like, and you know, with some people, that's not always the best option. With Kevin, Kevin's gotten, you know, thicker skin, you know, through the years because he had to, you know, but it's like, but it's like even ideas and, you know, it's like, hey, I want to go do this. And it's like, you know, learning how to talk to Kevin and making sure that, you know, that, that he's going to be on board with where we're going to go and stuff like that.
When the leg lock game took over jiu-jitsu, how much did you guys have to adapt?
Okay, so the leg lock game, there's been two phases to that. You know, the leg lock game of the 90s, the early 90s, the leg lock game was really, really big. I was doing leg locks a lot. Like when I went to ADCC, I, two of my matches to get there to go to when I won the national tournament to go to ADCC in 99, I won two of my matches with leg locks. And then I lost my first match against Comprito on a bullshit decision. I felt like I won the match. You know, it's like, you know, whatever. Advantage. It's like they but I went for a whole bunch of heel hooks, and the guy just wouldn't tap. Comprito is long. It's like, you know, he's about as tall as Kev and flexible, and just wouldn't tap. I thought I had him a whole bunch of times in the heel hooks, and so I took him out. I stopped doing leg locks. Yeah, it's like I was like, there's going to be guys that you're going to run into that just are not going to tap to these. We had some guys that were better at leg locks than I was that were training in Dallas at the time. And so I just went to straight defense. And it's like, I'm just not going to be there. And so it's very, very difficult for you to catch me in a heel hook or a knee bar and stuff like that. It's just difficult. You know, it's not impossible and not anything like that. But it's like, it's very, very difficult because I just concentrated on defense. Now the second coming of the leg locks is like the Dean Lister, you know, so it's like, you know, cause there wasn't really a lot of people doing leg locks from then till Lister. And now you have Gordon Ryan doing them, you know, but Lister, you know, it's like, he's a guy that fought in the UFC, you know, it's like he won ADCC. He won not his weight class at ADCC, but he won the open. On leg locks, you know, he'd gotten beat early in the day, and ADCC is a weird tournament because the matches are so long and the guys get so tired and the rules are different and stuff like that. And so he gets into the open and he starts subbing people with leg locks, and it's like and did really, really good with that. And then you get guys like Gordon Ryan who's come along and they've, you know, they've, you know, his leg locks are really, really good. You know, I don't rank him as far as like, there's lots of people that rank him like, you know, the best ever. No, you know, it's like you have guys like John Jock, who submitted his way through ADCC. You have guys like Hodger Gracie, who submitted his way through both his weight class and the open. And guess what? He also did it in the gi that same year, or either that or it was the other year, because it was 2007 or 2008 he submitted his way through in 2007 he submitted his way through ADCC, and then he also submitted his way through IBJJF Worlds.
You have to admit though, Gordon Ryan is what, 26?
Yeah.
How old is he?
He's something like that. Yeah.
26. Yeah. Dominating.
Yeah.
He's won Abu Dhabi how many times? Three times?
No. Twice.
He's only been twice?
Yep.
Okay. I mean, he's tapping everybody.
And he won his weight class. He won his weight class, and it's like he's tapped a lot of people, but like Shanji Ribeiro, you know, it's like two ADCCs ago when he was in the semifinals, he went against Shanji, and it was a judge's decision, you know, and then he won the finals. You know, it's like, yeah, he did submit Cyborg. Yes, he did submit some of these other guys, but it's like he won a lot of decisions on the way through that tournament. He didn't submit his way through. Hodger Gracie did. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like he submitted his way not only through IBJJF Worlds, but he also did it through ADCC on the same year, or maybe it was a year off.
Well, no denying Hodge Gracie's greatness.
I'm not saying that, you know, that Gordon Ryan's not really, really, really good. I'm just not saying that he's in the same level. You know, it's in a silly argument anyway. But
it's a weird argument, but he's got a lot of room to grow. I mean, that fucking guy keeps going. He's got a lot of room to grow.
I was there when he lost right before, you know, he put on all the weight. And he put on a lot of weight in about 3-4 months period. You know, I think it was Lucas Lepre at the ADCC trials. You know, it's like I had a guy that was competing in the trials. And so I watched that match in person. And you know, he wasn't as good. And then he came back and he's 30, 40 pounds heavier and he wins ADCC. And it's like, what the fuck happened? You know, it's like, how do you do this in this 4 months of time? It's like, I've been lifting weights for a long time. It's like, I can't do that.
Yeah, there's probably some Mexican supplements involved. If I had a guess.
I like how you put
yeah.
that.
Yeah, that's what I always like to call them. Because you could go down to Tijuana and buy steroids at a pharmacy. So when dudes get juiced up in jiu-jitsu, I would say he's on the Mexican supplements.
Mexican supplements. Walk across the border.
Yeah.
Walk right back across.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Look good.
Legitimately. Oh, look, man. He's undeniably looks good. But so have you guys adjusted your leg lock game because of, like, the whole Death Squad?
Everything stayed the same. It's like I'm still doing everything the same. It's like, it's just, you know, it's like don't get caught. You know, it's like that's my philosophy with it is. It's like we have our guys in the gym that are good at leg locks. And then, you know, biggest thing is just don't get caught in them. You know, it's like, is it going to happen? Yeah, you're going to get caught sometimes. It's like jiu-jitsu. It's like arm bars, you know.
Particularly
it's
like, with the gi, right? Yeah. I mean, Jesus Christ.
It's so hard. There's so many ways to lose. It's like you're going to get caught. And it's like you're going to, you know, it's like if you're training, you know, it's like and you're not getting tapped, you're not probably training in the right gym, you know. It's like, you know, it's like, you know, Kevin's gonna tap me. It's like it's gonna happen. His goal for
every
this year
moon.
His goal for the year is for me not to tap him. That's his main goal on the year is he doesn't want me to tap him. I haven't done it yet this year. You know, it's like I've rolled with him plenty, I haven't tapped him. So it's like
his role will be more this year than he was last year.
He's trying to get that goal.
I'm like, fuck this.
It's just such a fortunate situation to be able to train with someone that's that high level, though.
Yeah, it's really nice.
It's everything.
Yeah, it makes a big difference.
Well, you got to know, right? Like, some guys, they don't get to train with someone that's that high level. You don't know what it's like to get smushed.
No.
You know?
Well, no.
You know, like, when he went out there with Jacare, he wasn't scared. You know,
right.
It's like, you know, it's like exactly. I'm going to go out there. I'm gonna fuck him up. Well, okay, I want you to stay on your feet. Stay on your feet. No, I'm going to fuck him up. You know, it's like... God damn it, Kevin. Let's stay on our feet. Stay on our feet. First thing he does is get taken down. I'm like, oh, fuck. Well, fuck, he's doing good. Oh, this is great. Yeah, it looks really good. Back on his feet. Looking good. Get taken down. Damn it. Still good. Oh, fuck, he's asleep. Yeah. It's like, what the hell happened? You know, that's about how long
crazy.
It took.
That was crazy. It was a crazy fight. That was a cementing moment for you, you know? It was to knock out a guy like Jacare and to do it in such an unorthodox way, doing it off your back like that. That's an undeniable moment.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. But things like that don't happen all the time. So as long as you go out there and you can make something special happen against another high-level guy, then we might be talking about something. But like I said, the last one doesn't happen that often, so I have to do it 2-3 more times.
So the Derek Brunson fight, which is coming up soon, what are your thoughts on Derek Brunson? I mean, we talked about it a little bit earlier, but, you know, he's obviously a veteran. He's obviously a guy who's been around, who's fought – Stylebender, he's the Shabazzian fight, his last fight, I thought he looked fucking fantastic.
Yeah.
And Shabazzian, that was an interesting situation, right? You got this kid who's 21 years old, super dangerous, real fast hands, looked great, but never really been tested against like a veteran. And then you saw wasn't really ready for that yet.
Yeah.
Brent's is good. You know, his wrestling's good. His stand-up's a little wild. He hits hard. You know, it's like it's going to be a fun fight, but it's like, you know, but the problem is it's like when he gets in there with the top-level guys, you know, he hasn't had a lot of success, and we're just going to find out if Kevin's is top-level as I think he is. You know, it's like...
You seen the Jenga?
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, that part where he goes, you know, Rude Boy, there's only 1 out of 10,000 niggas, and you that 1 out of 10,000. I'm that 1 out of 10,000. We're going to find out, you know.
It's closer to like 1 in a million. It's like, it's just different. Yeah.
Do you feel like this is a pivotal moment in your career?
It can be. It very much can be. But me and Derek Brunson, we have a lot of words back and forth.
Do?
Yeah. So it's going to be
Kevin
a night.
Fucks with Derek Brunson constantly. It's like, but Kevin does this to everybody.
He's in everybody's.
He's in Stylebender's in the inbox. He's in everybody's inbox. He's fucking.
Do you DM these guys?
Yeah, all the time.
Do they go back and forth?
Oh, yeah.
Some of them do.
All the time.
Really?
Derek does.
Some of
Derek
them are
does.
Nice.
Who goes back and forth with you?
Mike Perry's nice enough to go back and forth with me.
Does he?
I like that guy. He does. He's fun to play.
But he fucks with him. He fucks with him.
And then, you know, Brunson. Brunson started it, though. He told me he was going to slam me on my head, so fuck him. And then, you know, it's just, there's a few of them.
That was what he opened with?
Yeah.
I'm going to slam you on your head?
Yeah. Chimaev doesn't go back and forth with me, so that hurts my feelings. I don't know. He says he's about that life. That kid ain't about that life.
Mm.
I seen him at the PI. And I walked in, I was like, that's my best friend. He was like, you want to be friends now? I was like, fuck no. I was like, never. I was like, we're best friends without being friends. They were like, Kevin, there was a lot of them. They were going to jump you. And I was like, no. I drove out here. I got dildos in the car. I was ready to fuck them, you know? So that boy's not about that life.
Don't you think that, I mean, it's very unfortunate that he's suffering from COVID, that he's got this long-term situation where apparently when I've talked to doctors about this, I'm like, what is going on with that? And they said when you're training really hard and then you're breaking down your immune system and then you get COVID, you can get it real bad. Yeah. And when you get it really bad and then you don't take care of yourself in terms of, like, don't give yourself adequate time to recover, you go back in before you're really fully recovered, and also you're not taking care of all the inflammation issues that you have with your diet and with your supplements.
Yeah.
You hit a situation like him where he had to pull out of the Leon Edwards fight. Imagine being fucking Leon Edwards. One of the best fighters in the world can't get a fight.
He's fighting Bilal.
Finally. Yeah. Bilal steps up right after winning.
I offered to step up the last time. Him. I offered to Kevin, cut the extra weight.
Kevin was in there. Like, inboxes again. Like, hey, yeah. I'll fight him.
I inboxed Leon plenty of times. He doesn't respond. And then the thing about it is, a lot of these guys can say before that I didn't have the followers, so they didn't see the message. Now I have the followers, so you're seeing the fucking message. You're just choosing not to respond. Mm. You know what I mean? It's like, if we're being real here, these guys, half of these guys who claim that they're fighters, they're fighters because it pays a bill and it looks good online. It looks good on TV.
Is that the case, or are they being calculated about what risks they take?
You're not a fighter if you're calculating risk.
Really, though? Do you think that's true? I mean, if you're a first-year fighter.
Right. They're martial artists. He's talking about other kinds of fighting. You know? He's talking about life. And it's like, you know, he's not talking about his career right now. Right. He's talking about
the mindset.
For Kevin,
warrior
all
mindset.
That stuff kind of, you know, melts together a little bit. You know, it's like he's not necessarily, you know, saying that. Yeah, these guys are for sure fighters, but they're not real fighters in Kevin's mind.
I understand what you're saying.
Yeah. They won't, you know, it's like I get happy when I see these guys step up last second for a fight. Like, seeing Bilal step up for that fight, I'm like, okay, there you go. Don't fucking complain about how you're not getting upper fights when you don't really put yourself in that situation to get upper fights. You know?
When Chimaev knocked out Mirchart, I was like, holy shit. Like,
yeah.
He knocked him out with one punch. I'm like, okay, now I want to see. If he can do that, I want to see, like, how does he fare against a guy like you? How does he fare against other, like, elite 170 or 185ers, which is weird, too, right? That he's just bouncing back and forth between those two weight classes.
He's bouncing back and forth to the fights that make the most sense. So he'll go to 70 for a fight that makes sense. He'll come back up to 85 for a fight that makes sense. You know, nothing wrong with it. Good management. Fighters who fight like that, very smart fighters. I tip my hat off to them. You know, them and their management and their coaches, that's great. That's not me. I'd never be that. So props to those guys. You know, but it's like, if, you know, you go to 70 because this fight makes sense for you, smart move. You go back to 85 because this fight makes sense to you, smart move. I was impressed by the way he knocked out Mirchart just because he took the smartest route, which was keeping it standing. And I thought the guy who liked the grapple was going to take it to the ground. Mm. You know, but knocking out Mirchart after Mirchart's coming off of losses, you know what I mean? And I know I smacked him a couple times. I know Deron Wynn smacked him a couple times. You know what I mean? And I know Ian Heinrich ultimately landed the last smacking. And I think if you add up those three people who have decent power and have been smacking him at 85, the head's just not the same as it used to be. He's even fought Thiago Santos, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you can't fight all these killers and take these type of headshots and think that you're going to be okay. If Chimaev has a little bit of pop, of course it's going to look good. I mean, smart. Props to him for taking the smart program every time you go out there and fight a guy. You know, it's like, we both fought John Phillips. I went out there and stood and banged with John Phillips. Coach told me in the second round, go out. Okay, you already look good in the first round. Go out there in the second round, take this guy down, choke him out. He's obviously not trying to go away from punches. Chimaev went out there, took him down, punched on him, subbed on him. Smart, smart fighter. Props to him. But what happens when you can't go out there and take an easy, smart route? What happens when a fighter's really fucking good? That's why I wanted to, like you said, I wanted to see the Leon fight. You know, I want to see tough competition.
That fight bad.
You know,
I was fascinated by that fight.
I would have took the Neil Magny fight. Him versus Neil Magny would have been. I would have been happy with that. You can slowly work your way up. I think you know, it's like after seeing Neil Magny being done the way he got done against, you know, Michael Chiesa, I think that Chimaev could have got the job done, especially being a big 170-er. But it's like, you know, it's, I don't know. And then you sit up here and you say it's sad because he has COVID and shit like that. But they said I had COVID. You know, and if we're supposed to be athletes, you know, it's like get the
fuck
over.
Yeah, but you obviously had a very mild.
Oh, you know.
I mean, he's had it for
my
months.
My girl had it pretty
months
good.
Months and months now.
My girl had it pretty good, and I was fucking her the whole time. You know, and it's like, so, you know, it's like, you know, it's like we all take it different, you know.
Yeah.
Different fighters, different heart, you know. Don't claim to have that heart if you ain't got it.
Don't you think it's just like a disease, though? I mean
some shit.
People just
the flu
have a harder
sucks.
Time with a disease.
The flu sucks, you know. Michael Jordan still went out there and won.
Well,
you know? Difference, you know.
I understand what you're saying. Yeah, it's a bummer. It's a bummer that we don't get it. Because, I mean, it was so exciting. You watch him. Yeah. He's fighting back to back. He's trying to fight. He's scheduling two fights at the same time. He's, you know.
Yeah. I'm just sad because I really wanted to see the guy fight again.
Yeah.
Just sad.
Also, sorry, you guys. Wanted to fight him.
No, not me. I don't want to fight that guy. He's a monster, bro. He's undefeated, smashing everybody. He's mini Khabib. I don't want no problems with that guy. You know?
That's not true. He was fucking with him the whole goddamn yeah. time over there.
Yeah. You yeah. were asking for it when I interviewed
yeah,
you.
Yeah, I'd love it. I love it. I'd take it.
Well, they had Kevin Edwards with him, too. You know, it's like Kevin Edwards with him, and then he said something to Kevin, pissed Kevin off, and then Kevin's, you know, angry.
But the boss has said on interview that we're in two different weight classes and that we'd probably never meet up. So I'm assuming that he's staying at 70 and I'm staying at 85. Yeah. And, you know, it's like, you know, maybe one day when he, you know, gets over being a little tired, he can get back in there and get some fights in and we'll be okay.
Are there any other guys in the division that you want to test yourself? Like, did you look at a guy like Yoel Romero and you want to test yeah. yourself against him?
I asked for Yoel Romero. The next thing I know, he's cut. You know, it's like they were talking about, hey, you want to fight somebody in the top 15? I'm like, shit, what? Give me Yoel Romero. Nobody else.
Why do you think they cut him? Is that crazy?
It has to be money, right?
It has to be.
He was just making too much money. And he's not, yeah. it's like, but did you want to watch him fight after he fought
always.
That? I didn't. After that last loss, I was like, okay, I don't want to watch him.
What, the Staubinger fight?
I always want to watch him
no,
fight.
No, the one after that he went up to, was it 205 where he went to? Or what was it? Or was it the Stylebender fight?
I think Stylebender was his last fight, wasn't it?
Yeah, Stylebender was his last fight at UFC.
You know, it's like he's a fun, exciting guy when he goes forward. I hate it when he fucking doesn't want to go forward.
Well, with Stylebender, I think he felt like he had to stay put. But when he just stood still and Stylebender came forward and then he blasted him with a big left hand right. and you see Stylebender's look in his eyes like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, this is dangerous. Like, this motherfucker is fast.
He's fast, man.
Luke Rockhold said he feels like he's made out of metal.
Well, didn't That'd what's his fun. Name say that too? The Whitaker? Didn't Whitaker? Yeah. I think Whitaker said that too.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, he said the difference in between the first and the second time he fought him, he said it's like he's a different kind of metal the second time. It's like, what the fuck, man?
He's a tank. A tank of a man.
That guy's story though, it's like about Cuba and stuff like that. This is, you know, that's a rough upbringing.
Do you know the story of him being examined by the doctor? Did you hear that story?
No, uh-uh.
Dana told me the story. He goes, they bring him to the doctor after he gets a fractured orbital. I think it was in the Whitaker fight. He's got some sort of a mild orbital fracture.
Yeah.
The doctor calls the UFC up and goes, where did you find this guy? And he goes, what do you mean? He goes, he's a fucking specimen. And they're like, yeah, he's amazing, right? He goes, no. No, like, we've never seen anything like this before. He goes, I've been examining people for decades. He goes, the tendons in his eyes are 3 times larger than a normal person's. It's like everything is weird.
Everything's weird.
His whole, the way he's built is just bizarre. And, you know, we were talking about it, and you know, the Cubans did some wild shit. Like, during, like, the whole Soviet days.
Yeah, yeah,
who
yeah.
knows what the fuck they were doing with their athletes.
Right.
Like, they might have been, you know, doing some wild experiments in engineering. Russians did the same thing with Karelin.
Karelin?
I always called him the experiment.
Well, his parents are short.
Yes.
Yeah, they're like 5'5".
And he's built like a fucking, yeah. like a superhero.
He's 6'5", and it's like, and he looks like he's, you know, 200 pounds, but he's actually 270 pounds. It's just proportional. And
yeah,
it's like
moves like a cat.
But it's like, who the hell can pick up another freaking heavyweight and throw him over their shoulder like that?
Like nothing.
It's just going, ah! You know, just
There's that famous image.
Yeah, it's just
I put it on my Instagram I look at this picture every 6 months to remind myself what a pussy I am.
Dude, it's like
him just fucking. Have you ever seen the photo of Karelin?
It's the scariest photo ever of a human. You know, it's like.
I want to see.
We'll find it.
Just him lifting these guys. I mean, he made his own move.
Yeah, he was heavyweight. He was 270-ish.
Oh, he doesn't fight anymore?
There he is. That's the picture.
That's him.
So these guys would flatten out.
This is
out.
The move. This is the move.
He looks
that he's
like
doing
a demon.
Yeah, they would flatten out so that he couldn't pick them out because other guys couldn't pick them up when, you know, they're 300 pounds and they're flat on their stomach. But he would hoist them up in the air like they were nothing, then dump them on their head.
I mean, his record is 802.
Damn.
800 and something and two. Think about this in wrestling. In international competition, he's 800. Wins
and one of those two was Rulon Gardner, and it was just because they changed the rules. And when you break the hands, it counted as a point.
Yeah,
so he broke the grip.
It was an overtime. And if you so you get to start with this grip, and if they break the grip, and then he went to here. But the year, all the years that he was wrestling, his whole career, it was okay. you could do this.
Yeah.
And it wasn't a point. So it was just a bullshit point. And now it's like, that's nothing to take away from Rulon. You know, it's like, I mean, this is really, really cool that he won that Olympic match and stuff like that. But it's still a technicality bullshit. You know, that's his last match that he ever did. You know, it's like, and now he's just in Russia, happy.
What is he doing now?
I think he's like a senator or something. He's in some sort of a government.
He looked in that photo. Dude. He's not going to be happy unless he's throwing something.
How much meat do you think that guy eats?
Yeah, I can't imagine. It's like 270 pounds. It's like, what the hell? Just
plates of T-bones.
Yeah. You know?
I want to try that now.
Greco?
Pick somebody up like that?
Oh, it's hard. It's hard to pick a child up like that.
I don't think I could do my kids like that. You know, it's like, I'm going to spread your weight out. And it's like, and they're stiff. You know, it's like, you go, no, you grips? Can't do that. He does this, and he's facing backwards on him. He just picks him up. Show the video. He's
absolutely
of him
freakish. It's crazy. Yeah, Jamie, see if you can see the video of it, because he's done it to guys that are like 330. Yeah, and he just hoists them up like they're a sack of potatoes, and he just slams them. And the impact of him slamming them.
Has to be technique behind it.
You got to be super, super strong.
There's also technique. I mean, you have to, you know, but you have to be strong as fuck. It's like a Turkish getup, right?
Right.
There's a lot of power in Turkish getups like this.
There you go, Kev.
That's a mild one. There's some of them that are so ridiculous that when he hoists them up, that looks like a guillotine, man.
Fucking strong guillotine.
He was so strong, man. He was so strong. And guys were terrified. That's it right there?
Yeah, that's it.
See, they would flatten out. This is it. Boom. They would flatten out so that he couldn't do this to him, because that was what he was known for. Look at the size of that motherfucker.
And he'd still pick him up.
Yeah. Ridiculous.
These are the best wrestlers in the world. This isn't high school. This isn't anything.
See, this is what they would do. They'd flatten out on their stomach.
International competition, he's doing this.
He did this
to 800 and some guys.
Yeah. I mean, he was just a monster. Like a literal monster. Look, up in the air, you're going for a ride. There you go. Boom. Like, fuck all that. I mean, imagine if that guy learned jiu-jitsu.
No, it'd be terrible.
Oh, my God. I mean, imagine that guy entering into jiu-jitsu tournaments.
The same way.
And I believe he had a fake MMA fight.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
But it was fake. It wasn't real.
It was one of them Japanese ones, yeah.
They love that stuff.
Oh, well, that was so weird. Like, remember when Mark Coleman fought Takada, and he literally went pro wrestling style. I'm not going to tap. No.
You got to love Mark.
I love Mark Coleman.
Mark is one of the best humans ever. You know, he's so awesome. You know, it's like he's funny. It's like he's a guy. It's like he could have nothing left in his life, and he'll give you a shirt.
He's a great guy.
Yeah,
great
very, guy. Very good
and,
guy.
And one of the greats, like he got everybody gaining weight. When Mark Coleman was the UFC heavyweight champion, he got everybody gaining weight because they were like, fuck. You had to deal with this 265-pound gorilla
right.
who would just shoot doubles on you, and he could headbutt you back then. And there was no gloves on, so he's headbutting you, ground and pound, UFC and you 10. Couldn't get him off of you. You know? That just shows you how good Maurice Smith was, because Maurice Smith beat him in his prime. And he beat him with leg kicks, and he beat him with endurance. So Maurice figured out, because he was doing a lot of training with Frank Shamrock, and he figured out how to defend himself off his back and real good butterfly guard, realized how to hold on, and just chop those fucking legs when he was standing up.
Yeah.
You know? I remember I was there because it was a giant upset. And I remember because I was standing by the side of the octagon, and I heard him say, come on, Mark, ground me and pound me. Come on. He was talking to him like, boom. I mean, this was, at the time...
Look how big he is, though.
He was enormous. But at the time, this was the most spectacular upset in the history of the sport. Everybody thought that Mark Coleman was just impossible to beat. He was so big. And look at Mark's wearing shoes. See that?
Yeah, he couldn't kick.
He had fucking shoes on back then.
Remember,
dude, Maurice Smith was the shit,
you know what's funny? I've never seen any of these.
You've never saw any of these?
These are good to watch, man. These are good to watch. This one is a really big one to watch because Maurice figured out how to defend himself off of his back and just took his time. And he knew look at Mark's wearing shoes. He knew Mark was going to get cold. And you could shoot. You could get tired, rather. You could kick with those shoes on. Yes.
At that point in time,
yeah, because Pete Williams knocked Mark Coleman out with a head kick with shoes on.
With shoes on, yeah.
Yeah, you could kick with shoes on.
Crazy. Wow.
Yeah. I think you couldn't kick, like, you couldn't throw, like, a side kick to the face. I don't think you could hit him with the bottom of your foot.
No souls.
Yeah. Alex Andreas, Alex Andreas in UFC 30-something, he got disqualified for kicking with shoes. So, but that was probably
they
after
changed
this. Yeah, they changed the rules.
They changed it. Yeah, they started. They changed a lot of shit. Things got weird. You know, it's interesting to watch the evolution of the sport over the years and
it's
the rules.
Like some of the stoppages.
There
that
it
they,
is, right here. They,
wow!
Ouch. Boom! Pete Williams. Oh. Pete later became a chef.
Yeah,
I believe in Hawaii. I think he's a chef in Hawaii.
You know, Charles Rosa. I think he's a chef.
Is
really?
He?
Yeah.
Pete's a nice guy.
Very nice guy.
Yeah, he's a nice guy.
That was a big victory too, man. God,
that was huge. That
was Mark huge. Coleman back in the day when he came around, he was the first really enormous wrestler,
right?
That figured out how to take guys down, and smash them.
You know what weight he wrestled in college?
What?
And won? 189.
Wow. Yeah.
189. Crazy. You know, so it's like, you know, guess what weight DC was at? And, you know, it's like in college. He wrestled at 189. He took second. He took
is that
second.
Coleman? Yeah. No.
Yeah.
It looks like my size.
It doesn't look like him though.
Mark Kerr, 189.
That photo.
That's what he wrestled.
It doesn't look like his face. That's what's crazy. Yeah, Mark Kerr was the biggest example of a freak. Did you ever see that documentary, The Smashing Machine?
Yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah.
What about Alistair Overeem? He used to be small.
He fought at 205.
Yeah. Alistair was against thin. Chuck. Yeah, he got KO'd by Chuck.
Chuck and Pride.
Yeah, he was thin back then. Like, he looked different. Yeah. But the Alistair that fought Brock Lesnar.
Oh, my God.
That's a big guy. That's a great argument for supplements.
Dude, like he looked
like
amazing.
You kind of want to see like, what a guy can do. You know? You just let him.
No more rules. Just
no
stick him in.
No more rules. Just juice it up.
Go at it. You
juice
know?
It up. I mean, he was a monster when he was a heavyweight. When he won, you got to think about that guy's career. That guy won the
Alistair?
Yeah, K1 Grand Prix, right. Which is insane, right? He won the Dream Heavyweight Championship. He won the Strikeforce Heavyweight Championship. I mean, he's a mother. He won the Abu Dhabi Trials in Europe.
See that and that UFC belt.
Eluded
so elusive.
Him. Yep. Yeah, eluded him.
Remember when he used to carry that hammer?
Oh yeah,
and to Pride. He had this hammer that was like
the Demolition
this,
Man.
It was
called.
Like, and he came in carrying this freaking hammer. It was, the theatrics in freaking Pride were
awesome.
Do
you remember when Chemo used to come on with a cross on his back?
Yes, it's like carry that.
He would carry a fucking cross into the octagon, and then Joseon, when he fought, he carried that same cross or a similar cross.
Right.
When he fought into the octagon,
I mean, this is a prop. You know, this
dude.
Is,
not only that, but you get exhausted. How much does a cross weigh?
I don't know.
A big ass cross?
I don't know.
It was a huge cross, too.
Was it like a real like metal one or something?
No, wood.
Oh, wood.
Like a big ass. Look at this. Look at that. He's carrying that fucking thing into the octagon. I mean, shit, that's got to be a 60-pound cross. Look how heavy that is.
You'd have to go to Home Depot and make that before you go fight. You know, it's like they're not going to let you fly with that.
Yeah, you gotta.
I didn't even think about all that. He's like taking it with him everywhere he goes.
That's such a good point. You gotta actually build it while you're there.
It's like, oh, shit.
All right, we gotta do our meal prep. We gotta build the cross. You gotta carry it into the octagon. It's been crazy when you think about the evolution of the sport from 93 into 2021. It's changed martial arts like, forever.
Yeah. For the better. It's a lot more honest and stuff like that. You know, it's like,
my God, so much more. I mean, still, you know, you can see plenty of fake martial arts online.
Right,
if you go on Instagram, you can see some of these like ridiculous guys with the chi touch and you know, touching people and they go unconscious. But back in the day when I was doing martial arts, it was like people really thought that shit was real.
Well, there's still people that think it's real. You know, it's like, I mean, they're crazy people, but there's, you know, it's like they think it's real.
What year did you start training jiu-jitsu?
95, 96, somewhere in there.
Early adopter.
Yeah. But I was in South Dakota. I lived in South Dakota. I was going to college in South Dakota. There was no place to learn. So it's like we bought the
Henzo Gracie, Craig Kukuk tapes.
Yes, because we heard that they were
what the heck.
Craig Kukuk
VHS, you know,
red outside plastic. I remember I had those series. I just recently got rid of them.
Did you really?
Yeah, I held on to them forever because I thought they were cool. I'm like, what am I doing with this?
Yeah, it's just stuff.
It's like history though. It's kind of I had this box of VHS tapes.
Right.
from back then.
You got rid of him?
Yeah, I shouldn't have.
Yeah, so it's like I would drive down here. So I would drive to Texas to train with him, with Carlos. Wow. You know, so I did that for a year before I moved here, and I moved here in 97. So it was, I guess 96 or so is when I really started training. So
wow,
long time.
Yeah, those tapes were responsible for so many people's evolution as a jiu-jitsu artist.
Yeah, because it was on. You know, it's like, Enzo did a good job. You know,
yeah,
like,
he showed you everything. Right. Because I remember a friend of mine was training at Gracie in Torrance, and Hoist beat someone. I think he beat Dan Severin with a triangle.
Right.
And so they were asking, how do you do a triangle? And they wouldn't show him.
No.
They were like, you're not ready for that yet. And he's like, what? But you could go to these tapes, and Enzo would show you how to do a triangle. It's interesting.
Yeah, it's, you know, dealing with the Gracies is, you know, always going to be a little bit different. You know, it's like, because it's kind of like the big mafia family of jiu-jitsu. You know, it's like, and they have their little inner squabbles and all that other stuff. It's kind of fun to be an outsider and watch everything. You know, but it's like,
well, they, you know, they need credit because they did really revolutionize the art. They really did. They, their contribution, whether it's through Elio or Carlos or Carlson in Brazil, and then, you know, coming over here and Horian starting off the UFC, and then Hoist winning the UFC, and Hickson becoming Hickson, and, you know, being this legend that everybody's aware of.
Yeah, no, you're 100% right. You know, it's like, but then there was, at the same time in Brazil, there was, you know, there was other sects of, you know, people training, you know, that was completely and totally separate from those guys, because they weren't the only ones that got taught, and they were doing the same things. And then it's like, you know, and even Lucha Livre and just Brazil in general, it's like having the fights that they had down there, those no rules fights. You know, it's like watching, you know, Chuck Liddell fight Pele, and you know,
the nets. Remember that?
Right. And it's like, and they're, you know, it's like, I mean, this is just a crazy time, and, you know, it's like, and yes, they definitely deserve credit and things like that, you know, but they were, you know, there's more things happening than just them.
Yeah, there was more things happening than them, but they're a giant part of jiu-jitsu got maybe like 90% of it.
Oh, yeah.
And they're huge.
You know, it's like Horian bringing in, you know, being part owner of the UFC or owning whatever percentage. I think it was like 50%. He owned it the first five, and then he sold it on the fifth one. He sold his percentage away because they got away from, and the fifth one is when they stopped doing the no time limit stuff, mm-hmm. and he didn't like that. And, you know, it's interesting. It's like, but but even like some of the stories that you hear about, you know, some of the training that went on, you know, like before then, you know, it's like with the Machados on how they left and, you know, like, you know, because they got brought here by Horian, you know, and they were teaching out of the same garage with Hickson and all those guys. And then they, you know, for whatever reason, Chuck Norris, you know, liked Carlos. He liked Carlos. And then they, you know, eventually brought him out here to Texas and had him, you know, teaching him on the movie set, you know, or on the TV series.
Walker, Texas Ranger.
Yeah,
man.
That's a good show.
So, you know, it's just funny. It's like, you know, how everything worked out. You know, it's like, for Carlos and stuff like that.
It is crazy. Did you ever get a chance to roll with Hickson?
I never did get a chance to roll with Hickson. It's like I've met him, you know, a couple times, but I've never got a chance to roll with him. Roll with John Jock. I've rolled with Higgin. You know, it's like Higgin, when I went to Abu Dhabi, it's like I'd won the qualifier. I thought it was pretty good. I'd trained with Carlos a lot and stuff like that. And I'm warming up with Higgin, and Higgin made me feel like a little girl. It's like, you know, he was just, you know, this is when he was at heavyweight, and he fought Mark Kerr in the finals. And it's like, you know, taking, you know, Kerr's massive, you know, 260 pounds with his high voice. And it's like, you know, nobody can break this. You know, like this is his plan to win was he's going to put his hands around your hips and you can't break this and I'm going to win. And it's like, and he did, you know, it's like in Higgin, you know, but Higgin was just so good. You know, it's like, and I mean, John Jock is crazy good. It's like Carlos is crazy good. You know, but it's like, it was, you know, rolling with those guys is very fun.
Yeah, it's, I mean, you were at the ground floor of a very special time in jiu-jitsu, really.
Yeah,
you know, when jiu-jitsu was entering into mainstream consciousness. You know?
Right. I was very, very lucky to be, you know, have the opportunity to come here and come to Texas, learn from Carlos, and get to do some of the things that I got to do and stuff like that.
I started out at Hickson's on Pico, and then I didn't know the difference between the Gracies.
Yeah.
And then I didn't realize I was at, like, probably one of the best spots ever.
Right.
And then I found Carlson Gracie's place was, like, 15 minutes closer to my house.
Yeah.
So I go, oh, I'll just go there.
Yeah,
and so I was going there, and I was there when Vitor was, they would call him Victor, when they were calling him Victor Gracie.
Victor Gracie.
Yeah, I remember that?
Yeah.
And so that was when I was a white belt. That's where I started. It was John Iwano from Iwano Geese, you know, and Mario Sperry was there. They had like all the Carlson Gracie guys were there.
Yeah.
Carlos Pajeto was there.
That was a crazy good team. That had to be a good place to learn.
It was crazy, yeah. And so then when that went down, that was on Hawthorne in L.A.
Yeah.
And when that went down, then I went to John Jocks. So I've been at John Jocks since, like, I think it was like 97-ish.
It's crazy how you can grapple with that hand. It's like, you know, it's a thumb.
Yeah.
It's like, and it's just amazing. And that thing is a weapon too. It's like that stopping a choke with that thing.
Right.
It's
like slides under your,
we all started making a fist like this to try to come in. Yeah. You know, it's like John Jocks, crazy, crazy good athlete, you know?
Well, you know what he did? He also realized that because he didn't have that one hand to grab collars, he changed his game, and his game became more overhooks and underhooks. Mm-hmm. And so it was very easy to apply that game to no-gi.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's why when he went, like, there's a lot of guys that went to Abu Dhabi, and they were looking for things to grab,
right,
and their game was, like, severely diminished, whereas Jean-Jacques' game was not diminished at all.
Yeah, well, that's why that first year especially had such good, you know, success and stuff like that.
Yeah.
He looked really good.
Like, he's an awesome person, too. I love that guy to death.
Yeah.
Kevin, when you look at your career, like where you're at right now versus where you want to be, do you have like goalposts in mind? Do you have like an ultimate destination that you want to get to? Do you have like guys on your hit list, or do you just want to just keep fighting, keep getting better?
I'd love to keep fighting and keep getting better. I mean, but if there's anybody on the hit list, I mean, a good fun fight with Vittori would be nice. You know,
who?
Vittori, Marvin Vittori.
Oh, Marvin Vittori.
Getting this Brunson scrap out the way would be nice. And then I basically just want everybody who likes to play all those games, you know, like the little games that I don't like to play or that I like to play and they ain't playing with me.
What games? What do you mean?
Just, you know, the Stylebender fight one day. He don't have to be the champ. You know, it could be in the backyard. It wouldn't matter. You know, I say I don't want that Dechamaya fight one day. Would be nice. All these guys, man. I just want to fight, you know. It's like, and I want to fight all those guys that are supposedly really, really good so I can find out how good I am. You know, it's like, and it's the only way to find out, you know.
Do you have a time in your mind where you want to get out of the game?
Yeah, I'd like to be done at 34. There's other
34.
Shit to do.
34.
Yeah, and he's been saying that for years. It's like, it's always been 34. It's never changed. It's like he's been saying 34.
It's a good time because, you know, you're athletic, 5 years still in your prime, but it's not past it.
Yeah.
You're not, like, dealing with a diminished body.
Yeah, there's other things to do. One day my kid will have kids, and I want to be a cool-ass grandparent. So, you know, fighting past 34 might fuck that up. So I'll try and avoid that part.
Yeah, there's a lot of guys that you're seeing that are hanging in there a little bit too long, and it's that sad story repeats itself over and over and over again, and we've all seen it.
Yeah, and then, you know, the older you get, the more those new guys get to come by and make a name off you, and, you know, it's like, I want them screaming my name, come out of retirement, instead of, I beat his old ass, you know,
like
one or the other, yeah.
Yeah, 34, I mean, that's a total doable time, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
He's still got 6 years, you know. It's like, and Kevin's not as good as he could be yet, you know. It's like he's still things he can improve on, you know. It's like, and you know, it's like that's plenty of time. He can make a lot of money in between now and then, and life will be good.
As time gets on, and you get closer and closer to a title shot, and you get closer and closer to realizing your potential, do you think you'll ever change your approach and just enjoy doing things that are fun, or do you think you'll become more disciplined with strength and conditioning, more disciplined with your diet?
More discipline. It's happening naturally without, you know, me wanting it to happen, but I think I'll always have a great time with this. You know, it's like I enjoy it. You know, I'll enjoy
it until
I can't enjoy it anymore.
But I think you realize as you get older and as you get closer and closer to like the top of the food chain that there's these little differences that make, like, obviously you're a great athlete, obviously you're a fantastic fighter, but would you be slightly better if you did something different? Would you be slightly better?
They're making me want to.
So you know, he's doing it. It's like a year and a half ago, he wasn't doing a lot of the things that he's doing today. Yeah, it's like he's way more disciplined. It's like, hey, man, I don't want to come in and train. You know, I don't have a fight coming up. Now it's like he's in the gym all the time. You know, it's like a year and a half ago, I don't want to do strength and conditioning. I don't have a fight coming up. Now he's still doing it. He did it all last year. He didn't have a problem with doing it. He didn't complain.
It's becoming a new lifestyle.
But you haven't lost the joy. That's the thing.
No, it's becoming a new lifestyle. I really enjoy what I do, and it's like more discipline. It's like when I talk to my dad, it's like he's always like, yeah, it's going to happen as you get older. You know what I mean?
Just get more discipline.
Yeah, it just happens. You know, it's just who we are. You know what I mean? That dog that's in there, it tends to leave a little bit, and you tend to, you know, do things a little bit more like, okay, I probably should do this, and I kind of want to do this. This is a smart thing to do. Yeah, let's stick with that. And it's like, but, you know, it's like, it will happen. I just won't rush it. I won't make it happen. You know, when it happens, it happens. And I feel it happening every day. And it's like, things are a little bit more like a job every day.
Do you do any, but you still love it?
I love it.
It's a greatest joyful job ever.
I'd rather do this than flip burgers at Burger King.
Who wouldn't? What do you do in terms of like recovery? Do you do sauna, ice baths, massage? Nothing? You're laughing. Nothing?
They try and get me to go. I've done a decent job this camp of hitting a few places, making sure I get the recovery and stuff like that. But
we get him to swim. Yeah, we consider that like a recovery workout.
Yeah.
Getting him, you know, he smokes weed. That helps.
That helps. Listen, that's a good coach.
You know, it's like
great coach.
This is like my dad. It helps because it helps him relax.
Right. It helps him relax. It helps him, you know, it's like Kevin, you know, it's like I really think it's like, you know, for Kevin, you know, he really needs weed. You know, like we realized that years ago because I tried to get him. I like, listen, Kevin, it's illegal. You're not going to be, I just won't fight there. Listen, you have to want to fight in the UFC. I'm not going to fight there. They test. I'm not going there. It's like, and then they started relaxing the rules and they're like, okay, I'll go there. You know, it's like, but it's a medical thing where it's like Kevin, you know, just it slows down the world. It helps him relax. It's like Kevin without weed is difficult. We're all much safer with Kevin with weed.
No, seriously.
I believe it's really bad. I always found it made my jiu-jitsu better. I really did. I felt like I rolled, not my training, not learning. Like teaching things, I'm not good at learning things when I'm high. But when I roll, if I would get high and just roll, I always felt like way more in tune with what was going on.
Like open mats, like you just
go out there and roll, baked as fuck, barbecue.
It's like, but if he comes in barbecued, if he comes in barbecued, then that's too far.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's like he'll just be goofy. It's like that doesn't work for Kevin. It's
like one Kevin hit, comes two in, hits.
Yeah, it's like, okay, what'd you do yesterday? Okay, let's do that again. Okay, what'd you do yesterday? Don't do that. Don't do that. That was
bad. A blunt before practice. I've learned like a blunt before practice is perfect. You know, it's like it's when
but
I
just
smoke,
don't get too crazy.
Yeah, it's when I go two or three blunts. I come in there and I'm like,
and then we're talking about the blunts too. It's like we need to switch away from this. It's like, you know, it's like I'm like, you know, can you switch to this? And he's like, no,
edibles.
What about edibles? I don't know. It's like maybe. It's like, you know, but like, okay, what? It's like I'll just have Shug roll me a couple. It's like it'll be fine. Like, I use different paper. Fine.
Do you get massages or ice baths or anything like that?
I know a couple sexy girls.
I don't think that counts. I mean, like sports massage, like a real massage, like someone who breaks your tight tissue up and loosens your muscles
in my legs
up.
Yeah. Yeah, she cha 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 cha, you know, gets the action and we're good to go.
getting Kevin to do that stuff is difficult. Maybe when he gets a little bit older.
That stuff's for softies, bro.
Softies?
Yeah. Or older people.
Really?
One or the other.
Yeah, like you and I are older people. Yeah. Are softies.
But what about sauna? Yeah. You don't do any of that either?
No. There's no reason for the sauna. I mean,
no reason.
We get him to swim. We're happy with it. We get him to swim.
Baby steps.
Well, maybe a year from now we'll come back and we'll be talking about sauna. But I mean, it might be two or three.
So, yeah, it's bad. It's like I used to think the foam roller was gay. You know, it's like
what are you doing with it? Where are you putting it?
I don't know.
No, you just need to look at it. Why are you doing that?
Why are you doing that?
It's like this is silly.
Yeah.
It's like now you see. Now he's using it some, not very much.
Yeah.
Well, a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't like the resistant bands at first. Shug used to always want to do the resistant bands. I'd just be like, bro, that's for girls. Like, give me some weights. And he'd give me like 5 pounds. He'd be like, do this workout. I'd be like, five? This bro, this ain't nothing. Then I'd be tired. I'd be like, oh, God. So, you know, it's like, yeah. I don't know.
Baby steps, right?
Baby steps with Kevin.
Baby steps.
We'll take our time.
Listen, it's Kevin, fine. I'm a big fan. I'm glad you came down here.
Thanks, bro.
Glad I got a chance to talk to you. And it's been really cool to call your fights and really cool to watch your ascension up the ranks in the UFC. Yeah. And I'm excited about this Brunson fight. I'm just excited about your career.
Thanks, bro. I'm appreciative. I'm super happy to be here. This is cool. Yeah.
I could tell you are. And you're just a fun guy, man. You know, fun people like you, they don't come around that often, you know? It's great.
Thanks.
My pleasure. Great to see you as well, Travis. Awesome.
Thanks,
congratulations. Good luck to you. Can't wait to see you again. Goodbye, everybody.